Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 3rd, 1996.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning across all these many time zones as we enter into a holiday weekend, the 4th of July, Independence Day. A good day, I think, to do what we're about to do. Just wait till you hear. From the Tahitian and Hawaiian island chains across this great nation to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north to the pole, and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. And coming up in a moment, a man named James Collier, who wrote a book called Vote Scam. And a number of people have urged me to have him on, and I've got the book here, and I've got James Collier on the line from New York. Does your vote count for anything? Or is it really a futile exercise in what we think of as a representative democracy? I've always been somewhat in doubt, but I'm a listener, and I can be convinced, so we will see. James Collier and Vote Scam coming up in a moment. As promised, here he comes, James Collier. Who is he? He is at once an investigative reporter and co-author with his brother Ken of Vote Scam, The Stealing of America, published by Victoria House Press. Jim was raised in the suburbs of Huntington Woods, Michigan. Son of a prominent attorney, attended Wayne State University in Detroit and the University of Miami. In 1770, it couldn't be 1770, could it? He was Ken's campaign manager, that must be 1970, when he ran for Congress against Democratic incumbent Claude Pepper as research for a book idea sold to Dell Publishing, running through the system ballots, not bullets. What they discovered about vote counting in America triggered a 20-year investigation that culminated in this book. Jim has been a staff reporter for the Miami News, and in 1959 went to Cuba to write a 7-part series on the Castro Revolution for the AP. Both he and his brother were publishers of the Daily Planet, a national alternative bi-monthly in the 70s. I think that's where Superman worked. And the Miami Beach Herald Examiner, a weekly published in the mid-80s. His constant battle with the establishment press to expose vote fraud led him to becoming editor of the 4-decade-old News in Miami. He was based in Washington, D.C., established the Home Newswire, which reported on government politics and ran the controversial Vote Scam series from 1984 through 87. He appears on talk shows from coast to coast, which he is doing right now, has begun work on his second book, Vote Scam, The Shadow Government, which will further investigate the media's role in controlling the vote. Please welcome James Collier. James, hello.
You really had to suffer through that one, right?
Well, 1770.
I don't know who did that. 1970.
I just took a guess. Yeah, 1970. James, everybody wants to think that their vote counts. I vote. I'm a registered voter. And I go down and do my duty. And I somehow feel that it really does count. Is it really true that it doesn't?
In most of the country, it does not count. And it's really, I always hate saying that because it's the birthright of American people. And it's like kicking the pins out from under people when you say that. But thing is, I've been around the country. I just got back from a week-long, 10-day tour of Florida. I just got back 2 days ago. Spoke down there, and I'm going out to California in a week. And people from across this country know what I'm saying is true. And, you know, the people that are getting on the Art Bell show when you're a writer out there, you've really got to rise to the top. I mean, I know because Victoria House Press has been trying to get me on. And so I suspect that so many people must have called you that you said, let's take a shot at this guy. So
yeah.
Something's happening out there.
Well, Yes, it is. And, yes, a lot of people have contacted me, and I've always not scoffed at it, but been in doubt about it. I guess I'm naive. Anyway, we'll find out whether I'm naive or not. I've always sort of felt that basically, you know, I know about the dead people voting in Chicago and that kind of thing. But beyond that, I thought basically our voting was honest.
Well, now, June 25th of this year, Trevor Armbrister wrote an article for Reader's Digest saying elections are rigged in the United States. And I talked to Trevor almost a year before he wrote that article and told him all about VoteScan, but he left it out of the article. And Ronnie Duggar, who was the publisher or editor of the Texas Observer, one of the top freelance investigative reporters in the country, has written articles for the New York Times op-ed page. The editorial pages won't touch the story,
saying
elections are rigged in America. And people from states around this country are suing. It's a scandal what's going on out there.
All right. How's it going on? In other words, when I go down locally here and vote, I get my ballot. I go over. I mark my ballot. I hand my ballot back. Where does my vote get changed?
All right. Let me start at the beginning so I can get some predicate here for people.
All right.
It started in 1970. You read that. Ken and I had a book contract with the Dell Publishing Company to write a book called Running Through the System, Ballots, Not Bullets. And it was based on the idea that there was revolution, war in the streets, the Chicago Seven. Tom Hayden was a friend of mine. I grew up with him, went to high school with him. And I knew what he was going through then. We were publishing a paper called The Daily Planet, which was a national underground or alternative press paper of the time.
That was Superman's paper.
Yeah, it was Superman. It ended up getting sued, as a matter of fact, by DC Comics to knock it off. We did go to court with them in New York City, but that's another story. And so Dell thought it was a good idea that Ken would go back to Miami and run as a Democrat in the primary against Claude Pepper, who was
yes.
the father of Social Security, 70-year-old man, and ran unopposed mainly in Miami. And we wouldn't spend a nickel. What would the poorest guy in America be able to do if he was charismatic and spoke at every church breakfast, shook every hand, and did all the street work required out there?
Mm-hmm.
And on election night, 3 minutes after the polls closed, September 3rd, 1970, at 7:03, the CBS affiliate down there called perfect vote percentages of 250 candidates, and they were 100% correct. And then 20 minutes later, the NBC affiliate called perfect vote percentages, the same numbers exactly, but they added the digital total that each candidate would get.
Mm-hmm.
And they were 99.99% perfect, and in one case, in the state Senate race, four people, they were 100% perfect, right on the nose.
Okay.
And, of course, that was impossible. And what should have been the end of the book right there in 70 has gone on now 25 years. And so the day after the election, we went to the TV stations, and we got the on-air readout that shows what you actually saw on the air that night, and it said, from NBC, it said that the criteria for calling perfect vote totals was one voting machine somewhere in Dade County. And
really?
So the people who know Dade County on the west, in Pepper's district, the west is Liberty City and Overtown, which is the black area that often burns.
Yes.
The middle section is all European down US 1, and the beach is all Jewish. Where are you going to get a bellwether precinct out of that?
Well, you're not.
So we said, well, where is it? And they said, well, go to the League of Women Voters. They called back the numbers from the precinct. Now, what
right.
we found here was that we stumbled on a pilot project for America. Just timing was just perfect. And what I'm about to tell you goes on now across the country. So we go to the league. The head of the league, Joyce Diefendurfer was her name, the late Joyce Diefendurfer, and she lived in a big house in Coral Gables, and we went to her house, and in her living room with her own witnesses there,
mm-hmm.
she said, nobody called anything back to the TV stations, and I don't want to get caught in this thing. And she proceeded to cry right there in front of us in her living room. And, of course, we wrote about that in the Daily Planet and the University of Miami student newspaper and a bunch of local community papers and the Miami Herald News, and the TV stations wouldn't touch it. And we went to the FBI and opened up an FBI report, which anybody can get today under Freedom of Information under my name or Ken's name, Jim or Ken Collier.
Mm-hmm.
So everything we're saying is documented, and the whole book is documented.
Now,
and the book is an adventure story of what we found.
All right, James, I need to understand. You're suggesting that what was reported by the television networks had no relationship, or they were using some sort of weird little polling place to report what had happened, and that is not at all what happened. Now, how do you prove that is in reality not what happened?
Right. Well, the TV stations were saying we're not getting actual results from the courthouse. The computer has broken down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a story that is now being used across America. People have seen that in the past 25 years hundreds of times.
Indeed.
In venues across the country. The computer's broken down. We're giving you our projections.
Right.
We later prove, and we show in the book, that the computer never broke down. And according to the guy who programmed it, a guy named Leonard White, he said it was never down, it was never out, and that piece of paper should be in that FBI file, his statement. And misinformation was being given out, and he didn't want to get nailed with this thing either. And so what really happened was is it was the whole election was rigged, pre-programmed by the television stations, and we went to the elections, to the guy who programmed the computer, a guy named Elton Davis. And for NBC, and we said, well, what's your program? How could you do this with one voting machine?
Yes.
Because basically that's an A times B equals C formula, and A, the whatever the number was off that one machine, times B, your program, equals C, the vote totals, and you got to always know two out of three in an A times B equals C, and if you do, you rig the election. So he said, you'll never prove it. Now get out.
Well,
and we went to the FBI with that.
Yeah, fine, but I still don't understand. In other words, there are final real vote totals. No matter what television reports, there are final total votes, correct?
Correct.
Now, does that show that, in fact, the other party won? In other words, you're talking about a rigged election, or are you talking about bad reporting?
No, we're talking about a rigged election. The reporting was all made up in advance because, as we point out in the book, we had to go prove how once we found out that they did it, and that you couldn't do such a thing in 3 minutes or 20 minutes because nobody called anything back. There was no program, and you couldn't do it in 3 minutes anyway because you can't call 250 numbers off of a machine in 3 minutes.
Right.
And the ABC affiliate there was WPLG, Channel 10. It stands for Philip L. Graham, the late husband of Catherine Graham, who owns the Washington Post and Post
mm-hmm.
Newsweek.
Mm-hmm.
And this will later, as we'll get into this story, lead on to Watergate. But anyway, it ran a movie. And again, in 1972, it ran a movie, tacitly admitting that they knew what was going on but didn't want to participate, which is criminal for a news organization to do that. And I knew all the guys up there, and they admitted it.
Well, I still don't understand what you're saying went on. In other words, I understand you're saying that the reporting was inaccurate.
No, the reporting was 100% correct. And what went
well,
on...
Well, for what they were looking at, which was not a representative sample, that's what you've said, right?
Right, they had nothing. They had absolutely no input, zero input.
Zero input.
And yet they had 100% perfect numbers. How do you do that?
Well, how do you do that?
Well, usually I don't tell this part over the air because it's a cliffhanger in the book as to exactly the precise moment that we found out the truth.
Well, yeah, but when you're making this serious a charge.
Right, but I'm going to do it on your show for the first time because of who you are.
Okay.
So what happened was is... we started, they wouldn't give us documents, and we ended up stealing documents out of the courthouse, so mainly the canvas sheets. Now, how they voted then was on lever-style machines. It wasn't computer. It was a stand-up machine where you go in and pull the curtain and you flip a lever.
Right.
And what happens is you open the back of those machines in the morning, and the precinct workers read the numbers off the back. There's a three-digit counter for each candidate, up to 999 votes, because only 1,000 votes per precinct in America is the rule, basically.
Gotcha.
So they would write, they would read 000, and they'd fill in a canvas sheet, three canvas sheets, and they'd have to sign their name on all three sheets.
Right.
And that's certification. Now, at night, they would open the back, and they would read off the numbers. And they'd fill in the front of the canvas sheet and sign their name again. So each person signed their name six times a day.
Right.
And there'd be about 12 people per precinct.
Okay.
And so, and they would post one copy on the wall, send one downtown to the election division, one to the county court. That's how it used to be done in America, and it is no longer in the precincts of America that the votes are counted. That's an important point for people taking notes to remember. So it was in the precinct, and they did all that. And so now the canvas sheets, when we went to look at them in the courthouse,
mm-hmm.
looked all the same, except for maybe a half a dozen. Looked messy and like broken pencils and like humans had touched it. All the rest looked gray.
Hmm.
And even where people had indented in the morning, they indented at night. And I said, "These are forgeries." And so we hired a handwriting analyst.
Right.
And he came down. And he said, "No, these are not forgeries. This is real handwriting."
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up stealing all the canvas sheets, going into the courthouse, and a third-degree felony.
I'm sure it is, yes.
Stealing them all, and then went up to Broward County and stole them all, and went up to Palm Beach County and stole them all, and called the sheriff and said, arrest us.
Well, what did you do, walk in like the burglars at Watergate and rifle drawers and safes, or how'd you get them?
We did that in Dade County, and in Broward County, we went up to the counter and asked for them, and they took them out, and then we just walked out with them, and the same in Palm Beach County. We just walked out with them. And when we got them home, it's a great scene in the book. When we get them home, I throw them on my pool table.
Yeah.
In my living room.
Yeah.
And we look at them, and we're convinced that these are forgeries, and we take them to the police department in Dade County, the Organized Crime Bureau, and the cop there, Sergeant Blue, Walter Blue, he takes us into the lab and he puts it under a microscope and the pencil that they use, like the kind they use at racetracks, floated right over the top. Not a fiber was broken on the paper.
Hmm.
And no indentations, no busted pencil leads, no points, no mountains on the paper. And paper is fiber. If you look at paper, it looks like
you know,
it's all knitted fiber.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And so you not one. And he says, these are all forgeries. And so we went back to the forger.
Well, now, wait a minute. They're all forgeries.
I mean, we went back to the handwriting analyst who had thrown us off.
Yeah. How was it determined? Just because there were no messy marks, that determines it to be a forgery? How do you?
Yeah, because not a fiber was broken on the paper with the pointed lead pencil. And
okay, then how was the lead? If it was a lead pencil. How was it transferred to the paper?
Ah, well, wait. That's what we're going to get to.
All right.
I really hate to give all this away, but we're going to do it here. We go back to the handwriting analyst. About a year or so has passed now to get to this point because, you know, it was a real struggle because we didn't know where to go. I mean, you don't know what to do. You know you got the tiger by the tail, but you don't know what to do with
it. So you've got a cop saying, yeah, they're forgeries. You've got a handwriting expert saying, no, they're not.
Right, and he's the official handwriting expert for Dade and Broward County. Whenever there's a case, they call him in.
I see.
So we go to his house up in Plantation, Florida, and we go in and into his laboratory, and we put it under his microscope, and he says, nah, these are not forgeries. While Ken is arguing with him in his lab, I'm looking around to see what kind of books he reads in the outer room there. He has all his books.
Sure.
See the Measure of the Man. And on the coffee table is a copy of Police Magazine, May 1972.
Mm-hmm.
Take notes, guys. But it's in the book.
Police Magazine. All right, I'll tell you what. We've got a break here at the bottom of the hour. So
okay.
Hang tight. My guest is James Collier. His book is Vote Scam. Vote Scam, the Stealing of America. We're going to let it unwind before your ears.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 3rd, 1996.
About 30 minutes on the West Coast from Independence Day, are we? Does your vote count? Vote Scam is the book. James M. Collier is my guest. And we'll get back to him in a moment. Now to James Collier. James, all right, so here you are with two guys, one a cop saying, yep, forgery, the other a handwriting expert saying, no, it's the real thing. You're looking at his books in his home. What happens?
So on the table is a copy of Police Magazine. I don't know if they still put it out, but Police Magazine was big then. And there's an article in there on how to forge documents using a bank rapidograph.
A bank rapidograph.
Right,
in other words, something that signs or writes automatically.
Automatically,
yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You just get a signature and you can trace it.
Sure.
And it's written by the forger. His byline, the house we were in, he had it open on his vanity table.
It was his article?
His article.
Oh, my.
The hair stood up on the back of my neck. I showed it to Ken. And then I hear his wife or somebody rustling around the corner, and I said, let's get out of here. And I grabbed the magazine, and I ran, and he chased us out of the house. Give that back, and so we gave it back. They didn't want cops after us. And that was it. So we took it to the FBI, of course, and the FBI said, yeah, these are all forgeries. And the Organized Crime Bureau said it was forgeries.
Really?
And then they shipped all the voting machines out of town in 1973. And they refitted them with a device called the Print-O-Matic. Now, what I'm about to tell you is being used in 30% of the country right now.
Okay.
And they said no longer will the precinct workers ever be able to open the back of those machines again. From now on, they're going to crank a handle. And a roller will go across a piece of paper, which is put over those numbers. They were raised up like Braille.
Yes.
And it'll make an imprint, and the paper will come out a slot in the bottom,
mm-hmm.
like a gumball.
Right.
And it'll have the zeros on it, and you'll certify that.
Right.
And at night, it'll have the numbers, and you'll certify that.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time they used it in Dade County, they cranked the handle, and the roller went halfway across and jammed, and they called troubleshooters because nobody had keys anymore. And the troubleshooters came, and everybody could see that where the numbers, where the roller had not gone, it jammed up,
Right. Punched
up the paper.
Right.
The zeros were on the paper in it, and the numbers were already on it for nighttime.
You mean they had been pre-programmed
inside the machine. And so 4,000 precinct workers walked off the job, and the next day the Miami Herald wrote a story, September 24th, 1974, for you people who want documentation. And it said there was a big snafu when 4,000 people walked off the job, and it never said why. And it said firemen and policemen took their place. And hundreds of people went to the Miami Herald to get a story, and the Herald told them, go home, go away. We don't do this story, and so the TV stations.
Let me take you back for one second. With respect to the election that you say you proved to the FBI's satisfaction and
right.
so was rigged,
right.
What happened?
Well, the circuit court appointed an attorney. Because we kept taking it all to the circuit court, the head judge, and he says, I'm sick of you guys. I'm going to give you an ombudsman. His name was Ellis Rubin. And Rubin is quite famous in America. He was the Bay of Pigs attorney, the Watergate burglars attorney, all of them except for Liddy.
Right.
And a few other famous. His most recent one is he with Kathy Willits, the lady who was in Fort Lauderdale married to a cop, and they got her in prostitution, but he pleaded that she was had to have sex every 10 minutes or something.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
Right. Okay. So that's Ellis. He's a terrific attorney. Anyway, it didn't cost us a nickel. Court appointed him. He saw it all, and he talked to the FBI and Organized Crime Bureau, and they all agreed it's a rigged election, and we had proven how they had done it, down to the letter. So he takes it all to the state attorney's office.
Right.
TV cameras in tow. And he goes in, he waives immunity, which they made him do to intimidate him, which means if you're lying, we can prosecute you.
Mm-hmm.
And lawyers won't generally sign that. And he gave his report to the state attorney, and he comes out, and I'm sure we've got the Pulitzer now, man. This is it. The story's about to bust wide open. And he stands in front of the mic, and he says, State Attorney Janet Reno has told me to tell you that the statute of limitations has run out on the crime, and she refuses to prosecute, and he runs out of the building.
I'll be damned.
And that's the last we saw of him for 8 years. But there it was. Janet Reno obstructed justice, admitted there was a crime, lied about a statute of limitations, and she's in the Justice Department now.
Lied about the statute of
Yeah, there's no statute on fraud, and even if there had been a two-year statute on the original printed material that we found forgeries, it had 48 hours to go.
All right, so you were well within, or not well within, but barely within whatever limit there would have been had there been a two-year limit.
Right, but there is none on fraud. But anyway, right. She, Ellis eventually writes an affidavit saying that he told her to do her duty, and she says to him, this is what he's willing to admit, but more happened than this. She said, Ellis, if I do this, it'll bring down everybody in Dade County. I'm going to do it. So she didn't do it. And that's why she's in the Justice Department now, protecting vote rigging across the country.
All right. Now, you say that the same kind of machines that you just talked about are in 30% of the precincts across America.
Right. There's a woman in Waterloo, Iowa, who read the book, and then she had a public access TV show there, and she was on the school board. And she went to the election supervisor there and said, I want to look in the back of the machines and see what's on those printomatic, that piece of paper in there. And he said, when hell freezes over. And the Waterloo, Iowa Courier vilified her and told everybody in the editorials, don't read Vote Scam. It's not true. Don't read it. And I called up the guys over there. The head editorial writer and Eric Wolfson, and I had a long talk with him and explained, just like I'm explaining to you, and he'd read the book and all that, and I said, you know, this is wrong what you're doing. And he says, I know, but I'll never get the other guys on the board to allow you a rebuttal.
Well, in every case, you've got a candidate, an incumbent usually, and you've got a challenger at least.
Uh-huh.
Now, when a vote comes out a certain way, you would think if there was vote fraud, and with your material out there, the guy who lost would be inclined to say, look at Collier's material. It was stolen from me.
Right. That's happening.
It's happening.
Yeah, that's why it's finally gotten to you, because, I mean, the book has been out 2 years.
I know.
It's sold big numbers so far, just word of mouth, because the media won't review it. It's just word of mouth and radio talk shows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because if the book had no validity, it would die a borning, but it has it because people say, look, just what we found when we, and these are intelligent men and women, investigated themselves and have sued, gone to court. And wait till I tell you about the primaries. I mean, hang in there, guys. These last primaries, as far as I could determine, were all rigged, and I wrote an article for Media Bypass magazine saying so.
I've got that article.
Oh, okay,
article.
Anyway. Yeah, the people are doing it. They're mad as hell all over this country.
I just got
back from Florida, and believe me, I was talking to the Republicans of Palm Beach.
Yep.
These are not poor people.
No, oh no.
And they're not dumb. I mean, this is Palm Beach. This is Largo Mar.
You're on the air there right now. They're listening.
Okay, yeah, great. And they're mad. I mean, they got a city out there, Wellington. It wasn't a city. There's like 20,000 people out there. And somebody got the bright idea, hey, if we incorporate these people, we can become councilmen and mayors and set up judges and all that and really get all the money out of these taxpayers more than they're paying the county.
And
people didn't want it. And the polls showed they couldn't possibly win. And it won. They became a city.
James, you've reasonably documented what happened in Florida. How do you know this is going on everywhere?
All right. Now, let's get up one more step here to 1982 when the Republican National Committee put out a reward offer. It said, and it was in all the newspapers, saying that we know there's election rigging in the United States. That's the RNC. And it said, we'll give you $5,000 for every arrest and conviction you can get of people found tampering with the vote.
Right.
So we were told that the League of Women Voters were up in this bunker-like building in Dade County called the Data Processing Center out on Chrome Road, for you guys listening down there, and it's in the middle of the Everglades.
Mm.
Nobody could get out there. And that they were punching thousands of holes in the vote card. So we got a video camera, and we followed the vote card from 7 o'clock at night down to where it got counted. And it's no longer counted in the precinct. They take them out of there. Now, the vote card, this is the computer ballot. Across America now, what I'm telling you, I want to find, if anyone can refute this, call up Art and say, yeah, it's not true in my area. The computer ballot goes home to precinct captains' homes anywhere up to 2 weeks ahead of the election.
Mm-hmm.
Your vote is in some private partisan citizen's hands. Not only that, duplicate copies are given to them. So let's say they have 1,000 ballots. They're given 2,000 ballots.
Why?
Okay, they sit around and have hole-punching parties. And then when the polls close at 7 o'clock, and this is all on video, and I finally got a video. I'm putting out within the last month, I finally got a video, and the footage that I describe, what I'm telling you right now, is described in the book, but it's also on this video if people want to get it.
What actually do you have on video?
All right, now, I'll tell you. Anyway, we were told we would be arrested if we did do what we're doing, if we followed this ballot card. By David Leahy, the election supervisor of Dade County.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to a precinct and we created a lot of noise at 7:10, and then they called Leahy and the cops, and we ducked out of there and went to another precinct and quietly went in and had a camera, said we were from the Miami Herald, and we photographed the whole process and followed it down to the procedures the same across America. It goes from the precinct to, like, say, a high school where 10 precincts will bring their, or 20 or 50 precincts.
Sure.
Will bring their security.
For counting, yeah.
Right, and then they put these things in metal boxes, the 1,000 cards, and they seal them with a seal like you use on a meter at home, your hot water, your meters. You know, it's plastic end on a wire seal. You can't break them. Unless you twist them or cut them.
Right.
Now, when they get there, you see on the video, the guy says, my seal is broken. And because the video is on them, they didn't put a new one on. And you see a guy taking a Burger King bag. He walks in with it, and we didn't know what it was, and he puts it down. And then later, a whole handful, like 20, 30 seals, appear on the table. And so we asked the lady in the video, we said, well, if the seal's broken,
yes,
and you put on a new one and record the number, that's like fraud because it shows like there was never a broken seal. And we said, how could the seal get broken? And she says, well, that's a good question because you can't break them in the car from the precinct to the high school.
That's right.
What they do is they have duplicate seals. We later proved that. They have duplicate seals. If people are investigating in their area, you go to your elections division and find out who makes the seals and how many do they order. It's one of the things, the paper trail that you look for.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they had duplicate seals, and they regularly substitute ballots in their cars on the way out to the central place. And they bring them and they put new seals on, or they're given duplicate seals in the box, and they seal it up in the precinct, then they break it in the car and put a new seal on. So from that point, it goes down to this computer, this data processing center, where they had guards, metro cops, security guards, dogs, TV cameras, and we were told, you know, that we weren't supposed to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And we got in. And we got up three flights of steps, and we got in and we videotaped the League of Women Voters punching thousands of holes in the vote. And we had gone to the Miami Herald because we knew all the guys there.
You've got this on tape.
On tape, yeah. Wait, I got a punchline on it. That's why I say there's so many hangers in this book that for the people who want to buy it and read it, I hate to give away some of these. But
well,
anyway,
here's a question for you: on whose behalf are they doing this? Generally, the incumbents' behalf, I would presume.
Yes, 98% of incumbents win in America.
That I know that. I asked. It's generally in behalf then of the incumbents.
Right, because that's stability. If you see the corporate America, local, state, and federal, it's this one big corporation, and stability is important to the people who run the country, because you can't make plans, you can't get the builders and the developers and
mm-hmm.
everybody doing thing. If you're going to have a maverick in there who just wants to play hardball, and I don't want to give you a variance, you know, you're building out there into the swamps, and those swamps are for animals and they're for water. And you want to take it away to build your building to get rich. No, I'm not going to give it to you. Well, you don't need that kind of guy in power. Or somebody who says, I'm going to do an audit and find out how all you crooks ahead of us have been stealing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need that guy in power. And so that's been going on in this country for so long that to get anybody honest in government now and let them do all that would just blow this country wide open, which someday it's going to happen.
So, well, the implication of what you're suggesting is that both parties, on behalf of their incumbents, are doing this on a regular basis.
Yeah, but the ones who are doing it is the media. The newspaper in the town is, they all, you know, have these editorial boards where they endorse the candidates and all that. Those guys are the big, the publisher, you know, the guys, the country club set, they're the ones. The election supervisors just do what they're told. But the power is the media and the television station owners. It's a handful of people in each venue. And nobody can go complain to them because they're the media. Who are you going to complain to?
Well, I'm not sure now that I'm following you. I certainly follow the vote fraud part of it that you've talked about. But do you mean?
Yeah, but someone's out there saying, who's doing it?
So
who makes the rules?
Are you saying this because you go to the media and they won't touch it?
We go to the media and they won't touch it. That is correct.
Yep.
And not only us. I mean, people across this country have had wars with their local media over there. I've got a war going with Bob Woodward of the Washington Post. He says, don't start a war with me over this. And I have that quote in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. Because they won't do anything about it and because we actually know the procedure that they use. But wait, it gets even worse.
Okay.
It gets worse. Wait, the indictment of the media gets heavier and documented. Anyway, they're punching the holes, and the Herald had sent a reporter named Bob Lowe, Pulitzer Prize winner there, because we said, hey, we're going to go up, and they're threatening us with arrest. And so they sent him there to see if we got in. And he was there, and we get him on the video. Anyway, they're punching the holes. He writes the next day in the Herald that thousands of holes are being punched. There was a blizzard of Chad, was his quote. And Chad is the little hole that you
yes.
punch out of the thing, the little white piece.
He wrote
on
that.
The floor and on the feet below, mm-hmm. beneath the table. So anyway, we go into the room where they're counted after that. And this contingency of women and men being paid at that time, I think $50 per head per hour to the national coffers, out of taxpayers' dollars, to be in there tampering with the vote, and they're still getting it across America. Anyway, we go into the room where these BMX machines are, ballot multiplexers, which is just like a console, like an old radio used to be, stand-up.
Sure.
And they would put 1,000 votes in one side of a metal hopper and a light and a pneumatic thing that suck the cards past the light, which would read the holes in the cards and onto a magnetic reel that you see turning and then come out the other side. And so 8 of the 9 machines were totally dark and empty. Nobody standing, even nothing. And then the 9th machine, we videotape a guy taking a card from the already counted side, putting it back to be recounted, a federal offense. But the FBI stop actioned it for us, and they caught that the holes in the card were running the wrong way. It wasn't even votes. It was a phony deck.
Boy.
With that, the hand goes over the lens of the camera and it said, get them out of here.
Oh,
they
sure.
drag us down 3 flights of steps and out 100 yards to the Everglades, and the cops said, don't come back.
I'm surprised you haven't spent a lot of time in jail, James.
Well, Janet Reno had me arrested.
She did?
Yes.
So you did spend some time in jail.
I did indeed.
How long?
Oh, well, they bailed me out, so it was, you know, just hours. But I was under, you know, I couldn't leave the county till that got resolved. But how it got resolved, I don't want to give that one away. That's a good cliffhanger too. I don't want to just give that one away. She All did right. have me arrested, and the front of the book says the book that indicts Attorney General Janet Reno.
That's what
and there's
says.
A petition in the back of the book saying that we've read this book and we know there's election rigging. And
yeah, she's been saying she's sick of getting those petitions.
Yeah, she's sick of getting them, right.
I know.
So
all right,
me.
James, listen, we're at the top of the hour. Hold on. We'll come back. We'll talk about the primaries.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 3rd of July, 1996.
Good morning, everybody. My guest is James Collier, who wrote Vote Scam. And he has laid out an hour of very, very serious charges about vote fraud in America. And I'll tell you what I'd like to do. We're speaking to the entire land right now and beyond. I would like everybody to not call. Don't call. Hang up the phone. What I want to do is get some precinct workers on the phone. I want to get some vote counters. People in the system. Attention, attention, attention. If you have been a precinct worker, I'd like to talk to you. So let me give you the appropriate numbers. And if you have worked in a precinct, and you know of what Mr. Collier speaks, or you wish to challenge it, I want to hear from you. Now to James Collier, who wrote Vote Scam. James, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Let's talk briefly about the primaries.
Well, wait. Let me just finish one thing there.
All right.
The tape that we got, we sold to Pat Robertson and his 700 Club, the Christian Broadcasting Network.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, $2,500 he paid just to show that once on his show.
And so, do you retain the rights to the tape, James?
Yeah, but excerpts of it are on the video. Can I give a number? Is
that absolutely. In other words, people can get this videotape or excerpts from it on a videotape. All right, and on the tape, you've got the things you talked about last hour.
And in the book, I describe it down to every scene, including the dialogue. So if you don't get the tape, you can. It's very picturesque in the book. And then we went to Cincinnati. We got brought into there by Jim Condit, who you should have on your show, too. He's another investigator like myself and has done some great work. And we videotaped the League of Women Voters there using tweezers to tweeze out a slate of candidates under threat of arrest. We were there. And we brought that to the TV station, Channel 9, the next day, and they ran it. And we went on WCKY Radio, the Jan Michelson show, the next day. And Jan's now in WHO in Des Moines, that big 50,000 water. So people can call him and say, hey, is it true? Anyway, he challenged the election supervisor, Elvira Radford, been there 20 years, to deny it, and instead she resigned. And then Cincinnati Inquirer didn't write a word.
Huh.
So, and we've gone around the country, but now I'm telling people to go do it themselves. That's why I say get the book, because it's like a blueprint of what, because everyone said, well, what can we do? I don't want people to despair. What I'm telling people, and I'm now speaking everywhere I can get where people will bring me across this country now, that, yes, you can solve this problem and we can turn America back into what we thought it was anyway. Norman Rockwell is America.
Mm-hmm.
And get rid of all this, because all the problems that we're facing and all the civil rights that we're losing that people listening to this station I'm sure know about all come from people put into power who are voting our rights away.
Mm-hmm.
So we can change that. Right now, you can't vote them out.
Should Bob Dole be the presumptive nominee right now?
How do you mean that?
Straight on.
Should he be in?
Be the presumptive nominee? In other words, from your perspective, was it rigged?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna we'll get to. I think let me tell one more thing about the media, then we'll get to that.
All right.
Back in this all started. We digging for investigative reporting is mainly a paper trail. If you don't have it, you don't really have much. So we dug into the documents of this case, and in the Library of Congress, we found several documents. One was an election administration report put out by Richard Smolka of American University, and the other was a report by the American Air Force Staff Command College. And what they said was that back in 1964, after Kennedy was assassinated, the TV networks and the AP, UPI, and Washington Post, New York Times all got together with the United States Senate and Congress and the FBI and the CIA, and they made a deal. And they said, we will not contradict the Warren Commission report. And this statement I'm giving you, I got from David L. Wolper, who does all the documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
Until 1995. Well, that was wrong. According, Wolper told me 95, but it's past that. So we'll not contradict the war, that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone gunman, but we want the right to count the vote in America. And so they formed a pool called News Election Services, NES. And it's a network pool. So when you see Brokaw, Rather, and Jennings go on the air saying we're the first with the most, it's 701 and the president's Clinton, and they're not. They're all getting it from the same tote board at 225 West 34th Street, New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the Miami thing that I explained in the first hour. League of Women Voters out calling back numbers, their computer, same game. The pilot project is now national. And so, and their computers tie into every mainframe computer in every county in America that counts the vote downtown by computer. And it can change those numbers in counties across America at will. And it's tied into every Secretary of State's office mainframe computer and can register the vote. So the news media has total control of the vote. And I just found out from an investigator in Polk County, Florida, that there's a company called AIS, American Information Systems. Now, what we also discovered was that companies, there are private companies, and I have an open letter to Ross Perot in the book telling him about this, and he's gotten it from many people, believe me, is saying that these companies go and run the elections for the election supervisors around America because they don't know how to, the election people don't know how to run the computers. And they come in for thousands of taxpayers' dollars, unbeknownst to the taxpayer, without public bid. And they run these elections on every election, hundreds of thousands of dollars per election.
All right, James, I've got a fax here. It says, when 10,000 people show up for Pat Buchanan's rally and a couple dozen show up for Dole, who do you really think is the front runner? So,
yeah, well, wait, well, get to that.
Well, we've got to because we don't have a lot of time, and I've got a lot of people that want to get on the air here.
Okay.
So,
yeah, Pat.
Yeah, Pat. What happened in the primary?
Okay. The primaries, what happened was, is that in Iowa there was a caucus. It used to be a show of hands caucus.
Right.
This time they said, and now you'll know why I'm telling you about the media. This time they said, no, it's going to be a paper ballot election, but it's counted after 7 o'clock. Nobody votes all day. The people come in at 7 o'clock
right.
and raise their hands or they vote on the paper ballot. So at 6:55 in the Iowa caucus, the television media came on the air, and this is all documented, and said, we got the totals. We know who the numbers and Dole's going to win, and not a single vote had been cast. And so after the election, the numbers that they were told, don't register those votes downtown, those paper ballots. Just throw them away. It's not a real, you know.
Then why wasn't Pat Buchanan screaming bloody murder?
Well, wait a minute. So anyway, what happened was, is the next day in the paper, the people noticed that 10% of the Pat Buchanan's vote was shaved, and Dole was added 3%.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you call up the election supervisors in any county in Iowa, and you can do this, anybody listening, and say, how'd you get the numbers? They say, well, the media gave them to us. And that they, whatever the media said is what got recorded. And that was NES, the network pool. Now, Buchanan goes to New Hampshire. And we have a story in the book about how Bush rigged the New Hampshire primary to beat Dole in 88, and how Sununu was the beneficiary of that. Anyway, they run an ad in the New Hampshire newspaper, the Manchester paper, and if right. you go to Pat Buchanan's page on the Internet, you'll see this ad that I'm talking about. And it says, we've read vote scam. Now, I didn't know they were going to do that. They said, we've read vote scam, and we know you rig elections. Don't do it this time. Full page. And so Buchanan wins. Now the media the next day says it's the last one Pat's ever going to win. You know, the momentum in 88 carried the wimp Bush all the way. He loses his wimp status and goes all the way on momentum. But Buchanan's the first guy who has no momentum after winning. So they cream him on all the Super Tuesdays after that across the country, every primary. And 51% and 62% schematically across the country. And that's another thing to watch for in these elections. You'll see at 7:01 when Brokaw and Rather and Jennings come on and give you the numbers based on a phony exit poll in the East, those numbers will not change all night.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
It is true. They do seem to stay roughly the same.
Yes, everywhere. Local elections, too. And that's an indication right there of a fraud. Now, we go to Arizona. Buchanan, according to the networks, wins. And they have to come on the air the next day and say that for the first time our exit polls didn't work, Forbes wins.
I recall.
So now we find out that 60,000 that they're willing to admit to extra ballot, what they did is people got a plastic card with a 7-digit number on it. It was their own card. And when they went to vote, the 7-digit number was recorded on a piece of 8.5x11 paper by hand. And the card was punched, so you couldn't vote twice. But they printed 60,000 more that they admit to. And the election supervisor comes in the middle of the day at all of Maricopa County precincts there in Phoenix and takes all the ballot boxes away. Says, put the rest of the ballots for the remaining day into that box over there. And they go stuff them, and, of course, Forbes wins. After the election, all of Buchanan people call me and they say, what can we do? Because the election supervisor put out a report saying that only two people used those 60,000 extra ballots. And so they said, what can we do? So I called the election supervisor's office.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in the Media Bypass article. And I said, how did you know that? She said, well, we had 20 people after the election count take those 7-digit numbers, 219,000 7-digit numbers, that's how many voted, and run them into a computer. And so I said, 20 people? He said, well, 13. Okay, 13 people. I said, and they worked how many days? 3 days. I said, how many people? 10 people.
Huh.
10 people worked 3 days after the election, 12-hour days. I said, did they get a break? Well, 15 minutes. I said, that's it, 11:45. I said, well, maybe two breaks, 11 and a half hours. All right. That means that they had to punch 50,000 numbers a day apiece into the computer. That works out to better than a number a second, and they never could go to the bathroom. I said, did you ever hear of carpal tunnel syndrome? So I said, give me the name of the 10 people. No, I can't give you that. It's public knowledge. It's taxpayers' dollars. Can't give you that. Give me the readouts with the 219,000 seven-digit numbers. No, I can't give you that. And people in Arizona now are causing a big stink about it, and I don't know what the outcome is yet, but I'm going to be writing an article in Media Bypass when I...
All right, well, you'll probably hear from Arizona. I want to get to some of the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier. Hello.
Yeah, this is Tom from Nevada.
Hi, Tom.
And I've met Mr. Collier before. I think he knows who I am.
Yes.
I've been doing a lot of work here in the Las Vegas area.
You have been doing work all over the country. Everybody gets to you.
Anyway.
This man is definitely a person who knows the truth and who has been putting his own life on the line, helping people around the country.
Well, what I wanted to bring up was that here in Las Vegas, we videotaped some of the similar incidents that you saw over in Miami. We videotaped the ballot boxes coming in from the precincts to the Cashman Field, which is where they are supposed to be counted. The tables that received the ballot boxes, they call them transfer boxes, all the tables had what they call seals, these paper seals that are supposed to be on the boxes to protect the boxes from tampering. We have on videotape the tables where all the election officials were at receiving these boxes had spare stacks of seals on each table.
Yeah.
And we videotaped the boxes coming in with the seals that are supposed to protect the boxes from being tampered with and certify that they haven't been tampered with. Many boxes, we calculate about 20% of the boxes were coming in with broken seals or missing seals. And what they would do is they would simply ask the poll workers right in front of everybody, and we have it on videotape where they filled out new seals right in front of you, right at the election counting area, and they peeled them off and slapped them over the old broken seals. And then they took the boxes upstairs where the computers were, where they unloaded the ballots, and then they counted the ballots like there was nothing wrong.
Right, that's done across the country. Same procedure.
Maybe
everything is standardized across the country as far as the fraud goes.
Maybe you ought to get that videotape to Mr. Collier.
Oh, he's got mine. I got his.
Well, I've got his, but
everybody talks to this man.
All right.
Our video has got a lot more interest, a lot of interesting things also. But I want to bring up something else, Mr. Bell, that in Nevada they're doing something new. They're installing what they call all electronic voting machines.
Yes, I'm aware.
Sequoia Pacific.
Yeah, I know about it.
And that is the most insidious thing because there is no paper ballot to do a recount with.
Well, according to you guys, it's insidious either way.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, at least the paper, if you have a paper ballot and someone starts monkeying with the votes, you can go back and you can videotape it, you can do investigations, you have some record to work with.
Oh, I see.
When everything is stored in the computer, then there's nothing for you to tangibly record. For instance, in a bank, if you did not have any written statements or records of deposits, et cetera, you could not prove that somebody's embezzling money. If everything is done in the computer and they control the computer, you could program that computer to change the numbers at will for the votes.
Oh, sure.
And this Sequoia voting machine they're making, when it was tested in both Pennsylvania and Texas, the expert who was a PhD who certified it or did the certification test, a guy by the name of Dr. Ian Seamus, he states in his account of the testing, the procedure that he did and the report on it, he states right in there that you can program these voting machines right from the front panel where you vote. Now, he says, now normally that wouldn't be a problem because most people aren't sophisticated enough to know how to reprogram the machine to change the votes around, but that's exactly how the people who set up the voting machines determine it has rows and columns of buttons where the names of the candidates are. That's how they program the machine so that which button stands for which candidate. Well, if you can program the machine from the front panel...
I've got you. So I
assume... You can change it around.
Yeah, I assume you've been down raising hell with the city council about that.
We have a lawsuit out right now that's going to... one of the candidates, Pat McMillan, who is running for Congress, congressional positions, Congress 2, has just filed a lawsuit against that machine.
All right. Very good. James, hold on. We'll be back to you in a moment. We're at the bottom of the hour. We're talking with James Collier. Why can't I get that right? James Collier, who authored Vote Scam along with Kenneth Collier, and we'll be back in a moment.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
Collier is my guest. He wrote Vote Scam, along with Kenneth Collier. And we're going to get back to him in a moment. Back now to James Collier, who wrote Vote Scan. James, I want to hit you with this. Most Americans are good Americans. The majority of Americans are good Americans. My mom worked for the League of Women Voters, I remember when I was young. And I find it very hard to believe that you would get a group like the League of Women Voters, or whoever might be counting the votes, to sit there and participate in this massive fraud.
Yeah, you would think so, wouldn't you?
I do think so, and how do you argue otherwise?
I've sat in right in the middle of them and infiltrated the group, and they would sit there and talk about the good old days when they could punch holes in the car. Believe me, I hate that line. It's most Americans are good Americans. That's a romantic feeling. A lot of Americans who have special interests and participate in politics are good Americans. I mean, I would go to war with them and all that, but they'll rig elections on you in a flash.
All right.
I've seen lifeguards who had elections, and one of the, you know, there were two factions, and one faction actually had control of the ballot box and debated in front of me whether they should rig the election.
All right, first time caller line, you're on the air with James Collier. Hi, where are you, please?
I'm in Las Vegas.
Yes, sir.
Good evening, Art, Jim.
Good evening.
I've taken a lot of photographs and video footage of fixing of the boxes and so forth, and I did it as a result of being incited to do it by a fellow by the name of Jim after he and I and another fellow by the name of Ray had dinner one night a couple of years ago here in Las Vegas. Do you remember that, Jim?
I do indeed.
And as Tom told you, I filed a lawsuit against Catherine Ferguson on the Sequoia Pacific machine.
Right, she's the election supervisor.
Yeah. Of course, the problem is the federal courts are pretty corrupt, and they'll do everything they can to throw it out. And the only way we're going to get that suit on is if we get a lot of public opinion, if we get a lot of discussion on the radio and on the TV and the newspapers and so forth, to where the courts realize it's a hot potato and they don't try to throw it out.
Well, it's growing. This show today is a watershed show.
Mm-hmm. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with James Collier. Hi.
Hi, Mr. Collier. This is Elizabeth in Vancouver, and I just wanted to corroborate your thesis, your premise. I ran a couple of campaigns for a very ethical conservative Republican woman who campaigned on her intention to do an audit, in your words, to find out how much had been stolen by the guys who had been there ahead of her, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And on election night in 1994, I was watching the precinct returns coming in over cable TV, and a message came across the screen that the computers at the election office had crashed. So I called the election office to find out what was happening, and another conservative Republican volunteer came to the phone, and her voice was shaking, and I asked her what was wrong, and she cupped her hand over the phone and whispered to me, about a half an hour ago, I walked into this little room where they keep the computers which count the ballots, and they didn't see me. They had their backs turned to me, and I heard them say, in about a half an hour, the computer will be crashing. And it did happen. And
it's in the book. We write about it. Say, right? It's a national phenomenon, Canada, too. That's what they do. And what they do is they let through to see if they're going to get whipped by the candidate, the good
guy.
Right.
And
And then if they are going to get whipped because you see that candidate is winning, they crash the computer, and only when it comes back that candidate's losing, but only that candidate it gets turned around.
Exactly. It was a Republican sweep except for my candidate. But I have a question here. The same thing happened to her, incidentally, in 92 in exactly the same way. But in this case, they broke the seal on that computer, wheeled another one out, took the card out of it. But this brings up the question of voting ballots with software programs, and I wonder if you talk about that. Also, in this county and in the state of Oregon, we no longer have the safeguards of the precincts, and I'm sorry, I have to disagree with you. I think that is our only safeguard in any election, is to have a careful poll-watching count at the precinct level. That's gone in our county. It's gone in the state of Oregon because of mail-in ballots now.
Right. You're not disagreeing with me. That's exactly what I did say.
Well, would you talk more about computer software, and thanks very much for your
question. Okay. The computer software is all pre-programmed, and it's a black box operation, and it's got trap doors, Trojan horses. There's a professor at Princeton, Howard Strauss, who's written whole treatises on it and how you can't be stupid enough to vote on this stuff. He's got a thing called Election Watch.
All right.
And we quote him in the book.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier. Good evening.
Good evening, Art.
Where are you?
Great show. Erie, Pennsylvania.
All right.
Yep. Mr. Collier, now, for my edification, this is why I'm calling in. I work a precinct for a candidate, and it was my job to hand out bills distance away from the polling place. And then at the end, after the polling was done, it was my job to go in and get the count. Now, the type of machine that everybody uses around here is the type where you pull down the levers and the screen goes behind you after you pull down the big lever.
Right.
But you vote by individual little levers, or you can take one lever if you want to vote the party line, whatever.
Right.
And so after everything was done, these scrolls were taken out of the back of
the
machine.
Print-o-matic.
Pardon?
Yeah, it's called the print-o-matic.
Okay, yeah. And these were taken out, and they were laid on tables, and then the count was given to us people who were interested for our different candidates.
Well, if you heard the beginning of the show, I talked about that. And,
yeah, how does that work?
That's how they rig elections.
Yeah. I didn't catch how that works. How is that already done?
Pre-done ahead of time.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I tell people, have them open the back so you can see it. And so far, not a single precinct in this country have they ever allowed anyone to look at those pieces of paper in there.
Oh,
and I've been telling people, fight them.
Oh, boy. How do you get to do that? These people seem like they guard that with a militancy. That's scary.
You're talking billion-dollar business vote rigging in America. It isn't just here, it isn't there, and it isn't dead people. It's billion-dollar organized business. They have a newsletter that every election supervisor gets, election administration report. You can get it in the Library of Congress. They meet, election supervisors meet in little Appalachia-type meetings in big resorts in America every year.
Oh, boy.
And they organize. It's all the same procedure.
All right, well, he's asking, how do you fight it?
First of all, get the book, get Vote Scam, and show it to your friends and neighbors, because everything is in there. We put it all in there. And that was the reason for writing the book. I didn't do it just as an exercise.
I understand. Well, it would seem then the only way that you could fight it is the way you fought it, by doing illegal things, breaking in, that sort of thing, right?
You try lawsuits, but the judges that they put up there that you get are fixing judges, so you can't win on the lawsuit level. So until people are willing to... I'm telling people to boycott their newspapers, because the newspapers are in on it and running it. Boycott the advertisers in the newspapers until it becomes an issue.
Yeah, but why, even if you assume that a lot of newspapers are crooked, in effect, part of the whole thing, surely they're all not, and a lot of reporters would just love to get their hands on something like this. I know it's a big story.
Find me one. I'll talk to them.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
I'm in Ellensburg, Washington.
All right.
And my name is Craig. And I've been an election worker, and I guess I got to find out where they're paying paying $50 an hour, because we get about a little over $5 an hour here.
No, what kind of equipment do you use?
Paper ballots and pencils.
Well, you don't have that thing. Yeah, you got an honest election, probably.
I think so.
So you're saying they're not all crooked?
No.
Wherever there's paper, real paper ballots counted in the precincts?
They're not counted in the precinct, no.
Well, there's paper ballots run through a computer.
Correct.
Well, they're using them wherever the card reader is, and I don't know if it's in your area.
The whole ballot is run through.
Right. In the precinct or downtown?
Downtown at the county courthouse.
Well, you check it out downtown right there, and you see if there's a contingent of people who handle that paper ballot before it runs into the computer, and they're the people. They don't get it. The League of Women Voters gets it in the national coffer.
I don't know, everything you've talked about, I'm assuming that it's in bigger towns than ours, because I don't see it.
Well, go check it out. Maybe it is in your town.
All right.
Checked it out.
Okay.
All right, thank you, sir. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with James Collier. Hi.
Hello. Earlier in the interview, you talked about Pat Buchanan and then said that you was going to come back to him later.
Yeah, where are you, sir?
St. Louis.
St. Louis, all right.
Missouri was the only state that had, the media did not report on Missouri's primary. Why?
Right.
Who won that primary in Missouri?
That's true. They didn't.
Who won that primary, sir?
The caucus level was won by Buchanan.
Right.
And then when we got to the state level, there was some shady things done, and it wound up going for the Dole and Keyes coalition.
Well, anyway, Buchanan won it, and they couldn't report on it.
Right.
No,
and in Kansas, Dole, they didn't have a primary because they took a poll and found out that Dole was going to lose in his home state.
Yeah. Now, like I said earlier, you talked about what Buchanan would do after Iowa, and then you kind of just glossed over it.
No, I said what he did. I said he went and he won in New Hampshire with the ad that he took out in the paper. It's on his page for people who have the Internet. And then he went off with his tail between his legs after that. And believe me, people have gone after him for this. And I put forth a proposition that when they had the meeting down in Dallas with Ross Perot, and everybody was there from Pat and Republicans and Democrats, that the done deals were done there. Mm-hmm. And Pat was told he wasn't going to win, but that he could go out and make noise.
Yeah.
And that's the name of the game. And that Pat knows it. And it, on his page, it's filled. Just go to Pat Buchanan's page, and you'll see all the vote scam stuff all over his
Well, I can do that better than that. I can go to Pat Buchanan, and I can ask him, what do you think he would say?
CNN. He was on CNN, and I think it was Bernard Shaw or somebody said, you know they stole it from you in Arizona, and he said yes.
I mean, just a meek little yes?
Yeah.
Yeah. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier. Good evening.
Hi.
Hello. Where are you?
Nashville.
All right.
I work for a local television station and in the news department, and I know that every reporter there would love to take this kind of a story if the evidence is there.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
It seems ridiculous that there's not a judge anywhere who's not corrupt, that there's not a reporter anywhere that's not in on the scam.
I guarantee you. How do you vote in that county? What kind of equipment?
I honestly can't tell you, because I just moved into the county.
Okay, so that's your problem. When you go investigate yourself, you're going to find out what I said, and you'll and if you do try to do the story, they'll fire you. David Burnham of the New York Times was fired, and we print that story in there for printing an article saying that Admiral Poindexter of the National Security Administration in the White House under Ronald Reagan. Did a report saying that the elections are rigged in America with computer, and they fired Burnham for that.
Well, I think it's certainly an issue worth being fired over if it's true.
Well, it is, and next election, sir, call me.
All right.
Yeah, me
All
too.
Right. Thank
Victoria
you.
Victoria House Press in New York City.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with James Collier. Hi.
Hi. You have an interesting program tonight.
That's good. Where are you?
I'm in Texas.
Texas, all right.
I'm a precinct chairman here in Mitchell County, Precinct 4.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know where these guys get their idea, but they are, well, I don't want to say they're, well, let's just say they're completely wrong.
What kind of
I have worked the election here in Mitchell County since 1982.
What kind of equipment do you vote on?
Pardon me?
What kind of equipment do you vote on?
It's a paper ballot.
Uh-huh.
We print like money. We have to account for every single ballot.
Do you count it in the precinct?
We count it there at the precinct.
How?
By hand.
Through a computer?
By hand. It's a paper ballot, and you count it by hand.
By hand. Oh, well, you got an honest precinct.
And they put the ballot in a metal container that has no seat. It's a very slim slot, and the top is secured by a lock.
Right, and then
it's only opened by one person. That's the election judge. And they count it by hand by three people, three different times. Then it's turned into the county registrar, who also counts it.
And do you record it in the precinct on canvas sheets?
Right, on a what we call a tally book.
Right. Well, you're talking an honest election, sir, and it's the only way it is.
My election is honest, and the rest of these are not honest.
Correct. You are what we want to go back to.
Sir, all the elections are honest.
Well, I don't know about that.
You're making money off of it, and the elections are honest. The people are honest. There's too many people in the line of chain counting these ballots for one honest person to say, whoa, wait a minute, there's something wrong here.
Yeah. So, I appreciate what you're saying, but you are India, Israel, and Great Britain all are democracies that use paper ballots only, just like you do. But the rest of this country uses computers. So to say all people are honest, I appreciate your godliness, sir, but they're not.
Well, I'm really not going for either broad brush statement. I don't think they're all rigged. I don't think they're all honest.
No, correct. They're not all rigged. There are places where election supervisors, and they've told me, North Carolina, I think, is one of them, they will not use anything but paper ballots because they know what's going on in the rest of the country. Just like that lady said, she got into the room and they didn't know it. And they knew the computer was going to break down in a half hour. When you get inside the computer part of it, and that's 70% of the country.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier. Hi.
Hi, Art Bell.
Yes, where are you?
Let me turn down my radio.
Good. And also tell us where you are, please.
I am in Houston.
Houston, all right.
The gentleman that just called, I tend to agree with him. I'm really surprised I got through to you, number one. Also, Art, I'm not sure why you're even buying into this. I have a lot of problem with this.
What makes you think I have?
Well, I guess I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
All right, I'm listening. I'm listening, and I'm listening to the callers. To me, it's very important that we get the people that work in the precinct.
I understand that, but this just sounds like one of those conspiracy theories.
I agree.
And, if you want to go with something like that, what makes us think, excuse me, I'm very nervous.
That's right.
What makes us think that this is not some liberal conspiracy to convince people that they shouldn't vote in the upcoming election, excuse me, because, you know, perhaps they see Bob Dole coming and they can't do anything about it.
Yeah. Well, did you hear all the other people calling in?
Of course I did. But I thought, I have tried to get into the show.
You think that
I have tried
conspiracy?
To get into this show forever.
I didn't know I was going to be on this show till today.
Really? Well, I have tried to get into the show forever, and I find it rather unusual that
I didn't know I was going to be on this show till a few hours ago, right?
That's correct.
So I didn't conspire with anybody. It's all true. And if you read the book, you'll know it. I think you're doing yourself and people a disservice, ma'am, because reading is really an important thing to do. And if you read the book, Vote Scam, The Stealing of America, that I bothered to write, you would walk away sick to your stomach about what's going on in this country.
Well, sir, I don't read. I don't believe everything I read.
Well, then
I read a great deal,
and there's
no way that I can believe everything.
Well, then go out and investigate how the votes counted.
That I intend to do.
Okay.
When November comes, I'm gonna follow.
Videotape
votes somewhere.
Videotape the whole election from 7 o'clock at night on when the polls close, and follow your ballot if it's a computer ballot there in Houston. I think
that's a fair challenge.
I agree. I'm a teacher, and I seriously thought about what you were saying about them not letting people follow, and I was thinking, gee, maybe I can take my kids and just say, well, we want to see what the process looks like.
Please, if you do, I'm writing a second book. Call me at Victoria House Press in New
York
City.
Well, if I do it, I'm not sure if I can get away with it, but I would certainly try.
But if you're not sure you can get away with it, that should make you sick to your stomach. Every part of the vote count in this country must be open and not secret.
You're right.
And if you have to hide in America because you can't get away with it, already you're buying into my game.
I understand, and I think my love for this country just makes me, I don't want to believe something like this.
Well,
I
want to
believe that
true.
I don't have.
Especially in Houston, my dear. In Houston,
right.
You're going to find out it is true what I'm saying.
All right. Well, I'm kind of with that lady. I think I'm hesitant to buy into it. I'm loath to buy into it, James. I don't want to believe it.
Where are you talking from? What city?
A little town called Pahrump, Nevada, west of Las Vegas.
Okay, but Vegas, you go check out Vegas, and you'll find out everything. I mean,
I know what's going on.
Okay.
I know the
So why
brouhaha.
Are you hesitant?
Why am I hesitant?
Because it's human nature to be.
Because I have an abiding faith in the majority of Americans being honest people.
And
not all of them.
It is the majority,
James,
are honest, but the people who are running elections are behind closed doors. And they're a handful compared to the population.
Mm-hmm. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier.
Hello.
Hello, where are you?
I'm in Banning, California.
All right.
Listening on K News.
Right. Well, we don't have a lot of time here, so what is your question?
Okay, comment. I was hearing about the paper ballots being honest.
Yes.
And I can say that is not always true.
All right. Listen, I'm going to ask you to hold. James, you hold. We'll continue to take calls. This is productive.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 3rd, 1996.
Into the Independence Day weekend. And so, I've got James Collier. He wrote Vote Scam. And we're going to get back into it and heavily on the phones this hour. And all back to that, back to all that in a moment. James Collier wrote a very controversial book, to say the least, called Vote Scam. We are now going to lay heavily into the phones. If you just have joined us, you'll get the idea very shortly. James, are you there?
Yeah.
All right. We're going to continue this hour, finish this hour, mainly with phone calls, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
All right. Here we go. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier. Hi.
Good morning. I'll go to topic in just a few seconds, but I just want to praise you to the skies. For years, I've been waiting for a program that was like Long John Neville, that dabbled in Roswell and all the other good stuff, pyramids and so forth.
All right. Well, thank you.
Very happy.
Where are you, by the way?
I'm in Plantation, Florida, at WFTL.
All right.
And you just came on about 3 weeks ago.
That's right.
And I've been avidly listening. Now, I'm a transplanted New Yorker, and I do believe I heard about the problem of vote fraud in the Village Voice, either a staff writer or the Alexander Cockburn press clips column. And it was extremely disquieting then, and now that it seems to be further documented by your guests, it's even more disquieting.
Well, there's a book out called Dirty Little Secrets, and it's all dying. That's a big, right now, those two guys are doing the radio circuit, and they're talking about vote rigging across the country in Dirty Little Secrets.
I just want to extend this further, by the way. I have always, and by way of disclaimer for what the language I'm going to use, which is not foul, I'm going to say I have never been anything more than a liberal Democrat. But we find, now going back to the language of communism and such, the running dogs of capitalism, the lackeys of capitalism, that is what the press is. And consequently, when we have to look, I believe we should delve somewhat further and see who is being represented when we have votes being rigged. But also a question arises, how is it that there were so many freshman Republicans, non-incumbent?
Uh-huh, good question. That's a very good question.
Well, I hope to make the program as interesting as I can.
All right, well, let's dig into that one then. It's a good point. How did we get those freshmen?
The day after they got elected, it was harder to answer than it is now because I didn't have an answer. But now, it's simple. What have they done? They were all GOPAC. They were all Newt Gingrich's GOPAC people. And what have they done but vote away our civil rights? And you know what all that. We don't have to go into that. They've done nothing. They've followed the national agenda. Nothing has changed. It was all publicity.
All right. So it was just rigged to go that way.
And it was mainly Rush Limbaugh hyping them.
Uh-huh. All right, first-time caller line, you're on the air with James Collier. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
But I don't know about all this capitalist blackies and stuff. I don't know. This guy, you asked for precinct callers to call in.
Yes, uh-huh.
You got two of them. Both of them said they're square. This guy said, oh, yeah, yours is square, but everybody else's is goofy.
No, one was talking paper ballots.
I'm sorry, but both of them said they're square. You agreed with both of them. And the first four callers were people you knew.
Well, I think that he agreed with the first caller until he found out more about that particular process. The second caller down in Houston, I think he agreed with fully.
Well, you had two precinct callers.
No, the lady in Houston didn't know anything. I said, go videotape
the election. It wasn't a lady, it was two men.
All right, I can't help that. But, I mean, what's your point?
What's the point? This is what you're talking about.
Well, read the book. I don't know. I mean, you're trying to be clever.
I guess I just got to read the book.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Nobody who can... I suggest reading. It's a lost art in this country. You can read the book and come away and say that. I mean, to feel that you're clever, that nobody agreed or whatever. You didn't hear the whole show. You didn't listen.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
I'm in Banning.
Banning, California. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I let you know. The paper ballots.
How do they rig them?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going back a few years. I was in L.A. at the time, working in the precinct. And when the precinct would close, I was shown how to do it. And we went through the ballots. As we counted them, we looked for ballots that were marked the way we didn't like. Make a few extra marks on them and invalidate them.
Oh, invalidation, yes.
Invalidation. And the other big way.
No, wait a minute.
Okay.
You're saying you worked in L.A., you worked in an election, you took ballots that you didn't like and changed them.
That's what the League of Women Voters was doing with the computer ballot. If you voted for the wrong person, punched the other guy.
I participated in...
Why did you do that?
Why did I do this? I guess because I thought I could influence the election in a way that I wanted to.
God, maybe I'm wrong. That's horrible. I mean, to hear that from an American, it makes me sick.
I want to tell you, Art, that I sat in the middle of Americans who were laughing at doing it. And I know it makes people sick. They don't like to hear this, like the last guy who called.
No, I don't.
They don't like to hear it. But
right.
If they go out and investigate it themselves, and that's what I asked them to do, use a video camera and you check out how the vote is counted. Find out who the computer programmer is, who programs your computer in your area. Check it out, and you won't be as smug as that last guy was.
Well, if nothing more than people going out with video cameras and following the election process comes out of this, then that will be good.
That's what I want people to do.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with James Collier. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, my name is Cliff.
Where are you, Cliff?
I live in Anderson, California, just below Lake Shasta.
All right.
How long is it going to take to correct this?
As fast as the American public wakes up. I mean, I just got on our Bell show. I've been doing lesser shows. I did a few 50,000 watt, but it's just gotten to Art Bell. And if you understand what that means, it's the grassroots are growing. And when the American public, this next primaries around the country, I'd like to see 1 million people with video cameras out there, and you'll all see what I'm saying. Don't take my word for anything. Check out your own elections, and there's not one of you except paper ballot people who will come away with anything other than saying he was absolutely true, and then there's going to be a revolution.
That brings my next question. You wonder why the militias are all pissed off.
They are, because every one of them knows that there's it's the ballot box, the something box, and then the bullet box. That's what they know. They cannot get regress of grievances at the ballot box. And I've tried to talk to Bo Greitz and say, you know, ballots, not bullets, but he won't talk to me. You know, there's too much agenda out there.
Well,
people are getting rich.
There's too much
getting
money
powerful
out there.
Off of agenda.
Against the little guy.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier. Good evening. Morning, actually. Turn your radio off. That's number one. And tell us where you're calling from.
Broward County.
Broward County, Florida.
Florida.
Yes, all right. Go ahead.
Okay. I just want to say that I was also in North Carolina. I was a judge up there, and we did have paper counting. And at least, on all our elections, we did the counting, and then we called it in directly. I called it in.
Right. And North Carolina election supervisors told me, and I just said that before, that they will not go to computer because they know everyone else is rigging them.
Right. Okay, but now here in Broward County.
Jane Carroll. Is your election supervisor.
Right. Anyway, we also count them, and we're very careful, and we have so many ballots that we have to account for absentee.
You use computers there.
However, we take them over then, and then they throw them in the computer, and who knows what happens.
Right, and believe me, I know Jane Carroll real well, and she knows what I think of her, and I don't have to say more to all you people reading between the lines.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, I was down there, and I was on a radio show, Mike Farrell's show in West Palm Beach last week.
Oh, were you?
And Jackie Winchester, the election supervisor, calls in, and I call her a liar over the phone to the public, because she says, I said, Jackie, when the ballots come in, do they go up a back stairs? Now listen to me, people around America, with computer ballots. They're always brought up a back step. That's part of the procedure, up a back elevator where you can't follow them.
Right.
They're not done in public.
Well, we hand them in at a little opening in a warehouse.
Right. Or they're
on a back street.
In Downey, California. Anyway, Jackie, I said, do you put header cards in front of the deck of cards before you read it in that ballot multiplexer? And she says yes. Well, header cards tell the computer how to read the deck, the cards that come after
it. Right.
And so that's across America. You people will videotape that header cards being put in front of your vote card.
Right.
And those header cards' only purpose is to tell it how to read what comes next.
That's right.
All right, ma'am. Thank you. I don't know how to react to what I'm hearing. It's disturbing. It's upsetting. I hope to hell it's not true. And I hope a bunch of people go out and follow the election process this next election. And I suspect they will. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier. Hi.
Yeah, I'm calling from the Monterey Peninsula. I heard that the state of Nevada has passed or is passing a law that you can't bring cameras in because it will intimidate the workers. What do you know about that?
I don't know anything about it. The guy who would know is the guy named Tom, and I guess he doesn't want me to give him his last name, but everybody goes to him there.
I have a question about here. We had a primary. There was a Republican running against another Republican. The guy was furious because he knew he should win, yet his opponent was consistently ahead because the station that was doing the live coverage was using the Secretary of State's office in Sacramento, where, you know, the mainframe. All the stuff was supposed to go up there, but nothing was happening. I called the local registrar and found that the guy was winning 2-1. He was relieved, of course, but what was going on there?
In the state of California, a group out of Irvine, California, called DMF. I don't remember what DMF stands for. It's a company. I did 3 hours on Pacifica Radio there out of L.A. In 92, and we tracked it down then with John Rappaport. And DMF runs the elections for the state of California.
One other question.
And by the way, the reel of tape that the vote is counted on in L.A. goes 20 miles away to Downey to be counted.
Well, you can invalidate a ballot, and I'm trying to explain this to Art, by just punching an extra hole. If it says vote for only three of the following, there's six on the list, you punch the extra hole.
I'm with
the
you.
The whole ballot is, okay.
I'm with you. That's what that guy in California just said he had been doing. He admitted
he had been doing. Exactly. The question is, if it's counted at the precinct level, we still have cards here, the paper. If it's counted, how can they invalidate it when it gets to the county seat and the main election? In other words, how can they invalidate what's already been validated on the precinct level? What does that tell you?
In other words,
if all of the ballots that go in have been looked at by three people right here in our precinct,
right,
and yet they get invalidated later or through a recount.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes. They go tamper with them, right.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good morning.
I want to tell you a story about New Orleans.
All right.
On December 3rd, this last primary, the primary was the 21st, 3 weeks before, the election supervisor was found in the alley with a bullet in his head behind a dumpster. A woman named Sue Berniker was running against the election supervisor's uncle. His name was Nick Gambaluca, 70-year-old councilman in Jefferson Parish. He would fall asleep at council meetings. Sue was real popular. Polls showed she couldn't lose, 41 years old. And so on election night, she loses. And she goes down after the election, and she videotapes the computers in the warehouse. And she pushes a button, and it votes for her. She can tell because there's a liquid crystal display about thigh high that no one would ever look at, and she didn't either until she scanned the machine with the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then she pushed it four times and voted for her, the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth. It voted for Nick Gambaluca. His nephew, Anthony Gambaluca, was found with a bullet in his head.
Well, you know.
So she goes, 20 machines, same thing. She takes it to the TV stations. They play it. The newspaper, the Times-Picayune, wouldn't write a word, nor would they write that Anthony Gambaluca was found dead with a bullet in his head. And no investigation. And she sues, and the judge she gets in normal rotation is taken off the case. A fixing judge is put in. He dismisses the case in 5 minutes.
If all you're saying is true, or even a healthy portion of it, aren't you worried you're going to be found with a bullet in the back of your head?
Well, no, I have that in the book. It says the first question everybody asks me is, aren't you afraid you're going to get killed, and have you gone to 60 minutes? And they attempted to, and you can read about that in the book. And we went to 60 Minutes, and Mike Wallace, investigative reporter Gayton Fonzie, he was in the one of the top two investigators in the country under Seymour Hersh, wrote a story that he had spoken to Brian Ross, NBC's top investigator, who said Mike Wallace told him, Brian Ross, that he had the biggest story in America, that he had interviewed me, and that it was the biggest vote fraud story, and then he gets to New York, and CBS says, forget it. So when I wrote the book, I give the book to Mike, and he says, Jim, as far as that book is concerned, I have permanent Alzheimer's disease.
Do you have that recorded or documented anywhere?
Yeah.
Yeah? You have Mike Wallace saying?
Yeah, believe me, the story of Mike Wallace is in the book, and the lead paragraph in Gayton Fonzie's story about Brian Ross is in there. He wrote that story.
No, I'm asking whether you have Wallace on videotape or audio tape or any recorded form saying that.
What Mike Wallace said?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying it over the air, and if Mike Wallace wants to dispute it, I'm willing to go on. It's in the book.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier. Hello.
Hello. It seems to me that something also very topical and parallel are the Russian elections, and I also read something in the Village Voice in a recent issue where a Western diplomat was quoted by the author as saying, yes, we know that. Everybody knows that Yeltsin rigged the elections. He's in illegally. But you see, he had just bombed the parliament and killed about 140 elected parliament members. Therefore, we didn't want to embarrass him or say anything against him. It's incredible that this guy that has taken over the media, that gets billions of dollars in effect campaign contributions from the West, to be, as an earlier caller said, a capitalist lackey for the Western corporations to rape the former Soviet Union, even one of his own allies, Yavlitsky, has said that he has rigged the election.
All right, look, we will ask about the Russian elections. We're coming down to the bottom of the hour. Where are you calling from, sir?
Lorain, Ohio.
All right. When we come back, James, I'm going to ask you about the Russian elections, the ones that just concluded with Boris Yeltsin having angina pains and yet clearly winning. I think it's about 55%, something like that. So that when we come back. James Collier, the author of Vote Scam. When we return, I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 3rd, 1996. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 3rd of July, 1996.
The author of Vote Scam, James Collier, is my guest for the remainder of the half hour. Next time you go to vote, you'll probably remember this program. Back now to James Collier. James, you're back on the air again.
Right.
And I want to give you an opportunity before we go any further and run out of time or something to give the information on how to get your book and or I think the videotape is very important.
Right.
So tell them how to get it.
All right. The book is Vote Scam, The Stealing of America, and it's James and Kenneth Collier. You can go to your bookstore, and they'll order it for you.
All right. Good.
All right. Now, let me tell you something. You know, the lady who called in who said it was a liberal conspiracy?
Yes.
You can't get much more conservative than William Buckley, can you? William F. Buckley?
Right.
He has a magazine called The National Review.
Right.
The June 17th issue, on the cover, this year, Rich Lowry, L-O-W-R-Y, the national political reporter for that magazine, The National Review, wrote an article called Vote Fraud in America, Early and Often. Vote fraud used to be a crude tool of machine politicians. Now it is skillfully engineered by liberal reformers. And just let me read you this a little bit. On election day, five men show up at a post office carrying luggage. Their bags are stuffed with 1,100 ballots, which will constitute 20% of the vote cast that day. Some of the ballots have probably been filled out by the men themselves. Others have been wrung from voters under the threat that they will lose their government benefits if they don't go along. The fraudulent ballots will help maintain a corrupt elite that regularly manipulates elections to its advantage no matter how people vote at the polls. And this was done in Greene County, Alabama. And I'll read one more paragraph. In recent years, evidence of vote fraud has cast doubt on the results of several statewide and federal elections. A stunning failing of democratic practice in the 90s, America. Yet fraud still gets short shrift in the national press. Except for a June 1995 Reader's Digest article, and I told you that was by Trevor Armbruster, and a chapter in Larry Sabatow and Glenn Simpson's new book, Dirty Little Secrets, an excellent, thorough account which touches on most of the cases dealt with here. Vote fraud has gotten little play.
James.
So for the people out there who think they're so clever and that I'm trying to put something over on them, that's William F. Buckley, and he did a good report. And he didn't put vote scam in it, unfortunately.
All right, James, today in modern America, right now,
mm-hmm.
What percentage of elections in this country would you guess are fixed?
Well, I know North Carolina isn't, and there's
no,
a few
no,
pockets,
no, no, not
but I would
what isn't.
Say, I would say 90%.
90%. All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with James Collier. Hello.
Yes, there was another news magazine article that if someone doesn't want to invest the $10 up front in the book, which I have read and I think is excellent, there's an article in Science News, October 30, 1993. The title is Making Votes Count, How to Steal an Election the Modern Way.
Mm-hmm. All right, look, since okay. You have read Vote Scam,
yes.
What was your assessment of it?
I think it's an even-handed presentation of the information. I know that the Colliers they were, you know, running for an election. You know, they were trying to, mm-hmm. one of his brother, I think Ken, was
yes,
running
that's
for
right.
office.
That's right.
And since then, I have watched the elections around me and news on television, and it fits. The book describes what happens when you look at election return.
All right, sir. I appreciate the call and the review on the book. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with James Collier. Hi.
Yes, hi. I'm definitely going to get that book.
Where are you?
I'm in Sacramento, California.
Okay.
And in our county, the way they did it was our voting place, our polling place just disappeared. And so I called up Nest Y, and they said they couldn't afford to have it there. There wasn't enough people. And yet the houses had grown. It was middle, upper income, or middle class, you know, nice homes, a predominantly Republican area. So I called and asked why, and they said, well, you'll have to mail them in. Now, what I found strange was you have to do the mail-in early, but they don't count those until late. In other words, they don't count those till last.
Right. And mail-in across the country, the state of Oregon and everywhere, is a license to steal.
Yeah, and they don't count them in the same place.
No.
And I saw a van full of votes going to a building. I inquired about it. They did not count votes there. I did that quite, you know, cleverly, I think. And I think it's a shame. What I want to ask you is this. Therefore, isn't it likely that the press and the media would know for sure and be able to say with certainty, Clinton, you got to give it to him. Clinton's going to win.
Yeah.
Because they know he is, because they know how they control this. And it's very easy to punch a button on a computer and add a zero. And there's so many ways.
Yeah.
What way would you suggest, other than following the van with your vote in it and watching the person count it, what would you suggest a person, what are our rights when it comes to watching counting? How public is it?
It has to be totally public, but almost everywhere it's totally secret. And you'll find that out as soon as you start to check.
All right. On behalf of the broadcast and news media, James, I've got to tell you this. You think a lot of them are in on it. I think that a lot of them are lazy. And I think that accounts for more of the go-along to get along than does conspiracy.
No, the upper level knows. Absolutely knows. I mean, the reporter, like the guy from Nashville, he isn't assigned to it. If he was, he'd find out, and he would get fired if he tried to do
it. Yeah, so. I'm not calling him lazy. I'm just calling most election reporters. You know, they sit there and read the numbers off
yeah,
the screen.
Yeah, that's it. They're assigned. They're puppy dogs.
Yeah. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier. Hi.
Hi, Art and James. I'm calling you from Omaha.
Yes, sir.
And I wanted to ask...
You know the Omaha World Telegram? Is that the paper there?
Omaha World Herald.
Herald. They control the voting machines in 519 counties in America.
Well, you know, I wanted to ask you something about, you mentioned American Information System.
Yeah, that's them. They own it.
Okay. I had a conversation 2 days ago with the founder and CEO of that organization.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to know your take about that. I heard you mention them earlier, but I wanted
What did you talk to him about? He owns AIS?
You mean
he
actually
owns the Omaha World Herald?
He owns the actual voting machines? Is that what you're saying?
He owns the company.
As far as I know, the people who own the Omaha World Herald are different from the people that own American Information System.
I got right here in front of me the names of both. I got the stockholder list. There's five people.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
why is that, though, necessarily?
Well, because if the news media owns more than 10% of the voting precincts in this country, how many do we don't know? You know, we just found that out. And it took a long time to find that out. When news media owns the voting machine,
yes,
I don't think that's good.
Well, it may or may not be good. Or
I know, but
it
may or
may
not
be
good, but it should be made public.
Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier.
Thank you. Calling from San Francisco.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to corroborate what Mr. Collier says. It's absolutely correct. Header cards, I had seen them in my precinct in San Francisco. Intentional invalidation of... the voter cards and to disqualify them are correct.
Horrible.
But this is not what turned me off on the entire system. There's a much bigger fraud.
What?
And I'm talking about the Anglo-American establishment, the fact that the Council on Foreign Relations has every election sewed up, which makes our experience in the presidential elections all theater.
Well, that's true. They're all CFR.
Yeah, it's all the perpetuation of the illusion of the two-party system.
Right.
And that's what it is, an illusion.
And we print in the book, and this is a great chapter in the book, where we get all the conspirators in one room in Washington.
The answer to David Rockefeller.
Yeah, but now listen to this. This is interesting. In the room is the head of ABC News, Roon Arledge, Leonard Grossman of NBC, I forgot who CBS was, John Sununu chairs the meeting, Catherine Graham is at the meeting.
CFR members.
Yeah, all of them.
All the media is there, and they say, there's no media here today, we can speak freely. And they're the ones who control the vote count in America.
Well,
they own the count.
This perpetuates the illusion of a two-party system, which there is none.
There is none. No, it's one party. It's called Indispensable Enemies, and they pretend that they're two. Oh, I forgot. The head of the Democratic National Committee was there, Kirk, and the head of the Republican National Committee, Fahrenkopf, were meeting together in the same room plotting.
Well,
and we print the transcript of the meeting.
Where did you get a transcript of the meeting?
From the people who printed the transcript.
The
things that we did, I mean, in the back of the tape, there's a sniper's nest in Dallas. The Watergate was never bugged. It was a third-degree burglary, but it was never bugged. That's why Woodward and Bernstein never won the Pulitzer Prize.
All right.
Because the media knew it was never bugged. It was a war between Richard Nixon and Catherine Graham over her television license in Miami for rigging the elections there, and Nixon was going to get her, so she had to get him.
Well, I remember that fight.
And they needed a federal offense, so they pretended there was a bug, and that whole story is documented in FBI files in the book.
All right, Wildcard Line, you're on the air with James Collier. Would have been. No, I guess we missed somebody. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier. Hi.
Hi, thanks a lot. This is Madison. Just a quick question. How do you think this relates to poll taking and all the polls we always
They own on? The polls. The media owns the polls. Check it out. It's ABC poll, NBC poll, CBS poll, Washington Post poll.
What do you think of that, Art? I've argued with you about polls before.
Well, look.
They own the exit polls, and they own the what comes after 7 o'clock. They own the exit polls.
They own the polls. But if you, for example, go to Gallup. And
that's Gallup ABC.
Gallup or NBC Wall Street Journal, I think.
Right.
If you go, there is a scientific methodology to the polling.
Yeah, but people lie terribly.
People lie.
Terribly. There's a whole report in there and done by a university how people lie. And then we point out the exit polls in New Hampshire where Bush against Dole. Bush was losing in 88, 9%, according to Roper and everybody else, Gallup, in that election. He wins it by 9 points, an 18-point turnaround in 6 hours.
Okay, what do you think about the current polling showing Clinton somewhere between 15 and 17 points ahead?
I don't know, because I tell you, Dole is such a wuss that it's probably true. I mean, I don't think they have to rig that election, but I don't know. The one who would have won would have been Buchanan, and they know it.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Collier. Hello.
Yeah. Hi, Art. This is really interesting. Sounds like something I want to do. What do you know about Western Michigan?
I'm from Detroit.
Pardon me?
I'm from Detroit. I don't know the situation in Michigan at all.
We use paper ballots.
Real paper counted in the precinct or counted by computer?
I don't know.
Okay, well, check it out and use a video camera.
Yeah, that's the answer. Go find out.
If
nothing else comes of this but that, then we're on to something.
Well, you and I have a rendezvous with destiny after these elections, because I want everybody to call me at Victoria House Press in New York City with their video. I want millions. I want them to say, we got it.
Yep. I voted for Perot. Everybody I knew voted for Perot.
And I tell you, whole cities, everybody voted for Perot. But they said he'd get 19%, and he got it schematically across the board.
Well, up to 25%, 26%.
Yeah, but so they averaged it. 19. He got it. They said he wouldn't. He did.
Yeah, he did. Well, listen, James, we're at the end of it. It has been a pleasure having you on. It's, if nothing else, it'll give people a lot to think about. I suspect you will launch many a video camera into many a polling place across the country.
Well, That's what got Rodney King there. So that's the beginning. I tell you, video cameras are going to level this country. The people have a weapon in their hands.
They do. It's true. And I want to thank you for being my guest. It's got to be what? Just about 5 o'clock back there in New York?
It is. The sun is coming up.
All right.
I got all 4th of July to sleep.
All right. Get some sleep then and hope the fireworks don't wake you up, James.
Okay.
Thank you.
Terrific.
That's James Collier, author of Vote Scam. We'll be back with Open Lines in a moment. And that should give you all something to think about. I don't know about you. I don't want to believe it. I hope it's not true. A little part of me suspects that some of it may be. We'll be back.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
Talk radio, rock and roll type in the nighttime. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. Good to be here. Now, I read you that truly disgusting toilet story earlier, and it figures. David from Visalia, California writes, here's a true story, Art. It is true. In northern Wisconsin, there is a remote tavern in the woods that comes alive every deer season. The bar, which overlooks the lake, has a large window, so one might enjoy the view. Keep an eye on the outhouses. The tavern has 2 outside outhouses for use by customers. The owner of this tavern put a speaker under the seat in the women's outhouse that is connected to a microphone behind the bar. Whenever a woman goes to use the outhouse, the owner tells all the men in the bar to watch this. After about 30 seconds, he keys up the mic and says, "Lady, can you please move over to the next hole? I'm down here painting." Well, you ought to see her red face as she quickly emerges, looking back to see if she's being followed. Ooh, that's the kind of thing that women's organizations will string you up for, nail you to the wall for, and bury you forever for, David. So it's a good thing it happens way out there. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Going once, going twice, gone. Wild card line, you're on the air.
Yes, happy birthday, America.
Well, yes, indeed.
I'm calling from Reno, Nevada.
Yes,
A-O-H.
Sir. Of course.
I got a guest suggestion for you.
You do?
An author of a book about 1982, called Tango with a Chupacabra by Nemo Maraschino. I want to get in touch with him.
His name is as hard to say as a Chupacabra.
Nemo Maraschino, yeah. He also wrote another book called Every Man is Atomic.
Every Man is Atomic.
That's right. Hey, you know, good. I'm going.
I think he wigged out on us. You know, as you listen to something like that, you sort of picture somebody self-immolating. I had a guest on that once. Even got a picture. It's really pathetic. All you can see is a guy's leg and the rest of him is all burned up. It's horrible. I mean, it sounds like he might have just sort of caught on fire and, you know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Let me turn this down.
Yeah, I'll turn your radio down.
I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
I have an unusually stupid question for you, sir.
I get them all the time. It's quite
okay. How do people of your stature, of your reputation, get a hold of copies of scripts of movies? Because you kept saying that you have a copy of the script of Independence Day.
They have secret friends in Hollywood.
Okay, then how do people of my stature, who has no secret friends, get to see these movies? Like these people who get...
They pay anywhere from $5 to $10 and go into the theater and see them. That doesn't,
I'm talking about...
That doesn't include the babysitter.
At the same time the critics are watching them. Because they get to watch them before everyone else does.
Well, that's true. You mean the premieres.
Right. How do I get to see these premieres?
You sneak in.
I want to do it legally.
Really?
Yes.
You got false credentials showing you to be Siskel and Ebert's brother or something, and I don't know, sir. I don't know.
Well, when you find out, would you please announce it?
I'll announce it when I find out.
Okay, that's only fair, wouldn't you say?
Well, I don't know if fair is the right word.
Okay, how about your word of honor?
My word of honor? Well, all right, so I will put out the word. How do you sneak into a premiere?
Legally.
Legally?
Yes, I want to make sure everyone knows I'm there. That way I won't get in any trouble.
Well, what do you do for a living?
I'm a security guard.
All right, well, give it up and become a movie critic. And then legally you can go in and you can see the movie.
Well, that'll possible. Work.
That's right. Besides, it's probably more fun being a security guard anyway.
No, I get paid to stay awake and I have insomnia. Go figure.
All right. Where are you, by the way?
I'm in Kansas.
Kansas.
KCMO.
All right. Kansas City. All right. Thank you very much. I don't know. You become a movie critic. Yeah, I've got a good friend in Hollywood. Secret friend whose identity I protect carefully, and he provides me with scripts, which is, as you well know, I don't give away. I never give away movies on the air. I knew about ID4 a month and a half ago. Have I said anything? No. So I protect my sources. Some guy called up last night and said, I'm going to get him fired. No, you're not. You're never going to find out who he is. It's all secret. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Ron from Stockton, California.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Art, I wanted to ask you two questions. Them seeds that guy sent you.
Yes, the demon seeds.
Yes. Did you ever figure about giving them to Linda and see what she can do with them? Or
no, it's my responsibility.
You're just going to put them away and just lay
them
to rest?
Well, we're keeping them in a dry, cool place.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know what I'm going to do with them.
Hmm.
I have no idea. What do you think I ought to do with them?
Well, it's pretty interesting from what you said last time about them, with that, you know, what you read, what that guy said.
Can you believe?
Kind of freaky.
Can you believe they actually put an ad in the Seattle Times?
Uh huh.
And it got responded to, and then I got this letter. Amazing, huh?
Really, that's strange. All right, another thing I wanted to ask you too. You did it last time. The space shuttle. When's it supposed to come down? Come back into.
I will let you know. I don't know yet, but if it comes down at a time that will be advantageous for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see it last time?
You know what, Art? You said to be out there 15 minutes to 4.
Yep.
I got out there at 10 minutes. I live in Stockton. Yep. I got out there at 10 minutes to 4. All I seen was the white streak.
Oh,
came back in the house, put my headset back on, and turned the TV on. And you know that thing was already in Florida?
Oh, yeah.
Landing?
Well, it moves right along.
Oh, boy, it must, because that was pretty fast.
Yep.
Thank you, Art.
All right, sir. Take
Bye-bye.
Care. A lot of people got to see it because we knew exactly when it was coming in, and we had everybody run outside, and so a lot of people saw it was really cool. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. My God. I'm always on the cutting edge through my whole life. The only time I ever got you before was almost at closing time in the morning.
Well, hi, sir.
It's such a delight to talk to you after trying for weeks and weeks of getting in contact with you.
Where are you?
I'm calling from St. Paul, Minnesota.
All right.
And I'd like to state to you that many of the things that you stand for, that you believed in, and now that you've got your kingdom of people listening to you, I want you to consider for a minute of the many, many people who have felt like you all their lives, have been institutionalized, looked on with raised eyebrows, called queers, nerds, and you everything else, and never have been able to get the belief system that you have got now. That is just remarkable, and we're all in awe of the ability that you've had to come to your pinnacle, where we all are still the submerged people, probably some of those that don't vote, because, see, with your program tonight about fixed voting and all that,
mm-hmm.
many of us don't vote because we believed a long time ago that the system was a fake.
Mm.
You see, so many of us who do not take part of the general activity of people in the United States have already lost faith. And
well, yeah, but you might want to vote just so you can make it harder for him to fix it. So they've got to work harder.
Well, thanks for the delightful thought.
That's the best I could do on short notice.
Well, bless you. Hey, listen, you went a little crazy added to that forest story with the, you know, the instance in telling the forest and the giants.
Yes.
I've been way out, far out on this, too. Whenever there's a mountain that has a mountain has this explosion of and throws out all of this...
they're called volcanoes.
Volcanoes. Yes. Sometimes we're speechless when we talk to you, you know. And anyway, I've always had this crazy idea that there is a very advanced civilization within the core of the Earth, and that's how they throw out their excrement, which is usually, what is it, pure protein or pure...
you mean a volcano is like the underground people pooping on us?
Well, the opposite way, you know. But I'm saying...
I get it. It's a horrible picture, but I get it.
If they were to evacuate the inner things that they are working with, they'd have to do it some way to put it through the surface. And it's actually not a foreign or ugly thing to happen to us because it usually feeds our surface earth.
I
often think about that wild thing, you know. There has to be a reason for that. Where does it come from?
I don't know, ma'am. I don't know. I've got to run. Thank you very much for the call. And that's the first time I've heard volcanic. That was awful. Where did she get that? Where did these people get these things? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening, Mr. Bell. This is Bill from Portland.
Hello, Bill.
How you doing?
Well, fine. Well,
great. I had a couple questions for you.
Yes?
One being, I wondered who is in line if something was to happen to Yeltsin. And the other question being...
it'd be Levitt, I'm sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And Levitt is considered to be a fairly honest, straightforward, iron hand, sort of reformer kind of guy. So, might be all right.
And the other question being, did Collier mention anything about the Russian elections?
You know, it's a funny thing. I was ready to ask him about the Russian elections. Somehow I got... We ran out of time or something, but he apparently believes the, and so do a lot of other people, that the Russian elections were rigged.
Right.
Now, if they were rigged in favor of democracy, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, that's a good question.
You got to think about that one a little bit, huh?
That's right. Well, you have a good night.
All right. Thank you, and take care. You do have to think about that one a little bit, don't you? I mean, what if they would have gone back to communism, but somebody managed to rig it so that the reforms continued? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. Good morning. I haven't heard you do an update lately on Art's parts, and I was just wondering what's the status of that right now.
More serious all the time. There's going to be a big update on them this Sunday on Dreamland. They're undergoing... some very significant testing at the moment.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll listen in for that.
All right, thank you. All of the rare metals people, all of the scientists, everybody who's looked at it on the webpage, and they've been pointing scientists to the webpage, all of the testing they have done, there is nothing like what we've got. Nothing. Anywhere. Nobody has made it. Nobody knows how to make it. Nobody knows exactly what it would be used for, except that it has anti-gravitic properties or power-gathering properties. It's very serious. Very serious. And I can't really tell you right now about all of the testing. We don't want to give it away for some very important reasons. But that's where it is. You'll hear more this Sunday. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Art Bell.
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is Port Townsend, Washington.
Good.
I'm a little upset. I've been walking around the last couple of days. You said something about the bees and the frogs.
90% of domestic honeybees are dead. All of the wild domestic honeybees are dead.
So it seems.
No, it's true.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it is around here. There are virtually no bees. There's fields full of flowers and no bees.
That's right.
There's a lake up the road.
It used to be so loud last year with the frogs that you could not hear yourself think. There's
now
no
the frogs
frog.
Are gone, yeah.
No frogs.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this all over the world? Where is, what is it?
Well, I don't know whether it's all over the world. I do know it is in this country, and it's pretty worrisome. Now,
yeah.
Now the domestic bees are supposedly getting taken down by some sort of mite.
Yeah.
Nobody knows why the frogs are disappearing.
Well, they're gone.
Well, one day, maybe we'll wake up and it will be people disappearing. Don't
well,
laugh.
See, this is kind of the thing, you know, you've been talking about the quickening so much, and, you know, we're in it. It's not like it's coming around, you know. It's like this is one of the years that it's supposed to be. And I look around, and yeah, there's all this stuff going on in the world, but you compare it to World War One or World War Two, you know, the human catastrophe is nowhere near that level. But the ecological catastrophe, boom, yeah.
Yep. Well, I mean, what would you do if you looked down in the middle of the night, you woke up in your bed and you looked down and there was some horrible-looking, deformed, mangled, ecologically screwed-up creature at the foot of the bed telling you to come along, it's your turn.
Does he have a spaceship?
No, he has an old garbage truck.
Sounds like we've already got them.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. Now, back to those celebrating the weekend. West of the Rockies, you are upon the air. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Grand Junction, Colorado calling.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, Art, if you were on in the daytime, you would be number one.
Well, I don't want to be on in the daytime.
I know that, but you have the most interesting guest, Mr. Collier. It seems like he has put so much detail and study into this book. I already ordered it on that 800 number, and I hope I have it maybe Friday. I know I won't. But there is so much believability there.
Well, I hope there's... It worries me. I don't want there to be a lot of believability there. It would be, as a previous caller said, we'd have a revolution.
Well, I'll tell you what happened with the recent election. It's just a little short. I went in to vote. I voted on those punch cards, and there were two things you voted for, only two things. I pulled the card out. There were three holes in it. And I took it over to the table and showed the people who were in charge, and she checked all the other cards, and sure enough, there were pre-cut one X. They were already pre-cut with one X, you know, with one notch in it. So I got home. I called the Daily Sentinel, which is my newspaper. I called our local talk show, which we used to have at that time, and they both followed up on it, but nothing. And the lady at the voting precincts followed up and called me back and said, well, you know, those cards come to us that way from Texas. We have nothing to do with that. And I wanted to tell you one more thing. I, too, was a Perot voter. Now, do you think our votes were just erased somewhere?
I don't want to believe that. I just don't want to believe that.
I love the way you use the English language. It is so interesting. You never use the same word twice in a sentence, and even the whole night sometimes I think, is he ever going to say that word again?
I wonder how I do that.
I don't know, but it's just so exciting.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care. Colorado. Is that true? Don't I say paradigm shift twice in a night? Quickening. Now, there's a word I use frequently, twice in a night. I do that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Art. How you doing?
Fine. Where are you?
Nashville.
Nashville.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, the phrase, rigged in favor of democracy.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I heard it. Yeah, but I just had to tell you, that is the definition of an oxymoron.
I know, mutually, I know, but I stand with the question. If we were to learn that that had been rigged in favor of democracy or reforms.
Well, that makes no sense.
Well,
that's an oxymoron.
Well, it may, but it makes sense at the CIA.
I don't want to get into that one.
Well, you know I'm right.
Right about what?
You know I'm right, that it makes sense at the CIA. And you know the CIA was out there doing their darndest for Yeltsin.
Yep, but you have to ask yourself why, and do we really know?
Well, the answers are obvious.
Okay, but anyway, I just wanted to make that point.
Well, I'm glad you made it, but I stand by what I said. Rigged in favor of democracy, actually reforms. They call it democracy, I don't know. I'm going to Russia, we'll see. Telling you. You know, when you go to Russia, they make you take 3 visa pictures. Not 2, like any other normal country in the world, but 3. You know what I've got? A very good old friend of mine who used to call the program many, many years ago, that many of you who have listened to this program for a long time will remember. His name was Tom, and he called from Mount Shasta. Tom has passed away. He was a good friend. Tom worked in Army intelligence, and he had a lot of good old-type buddies in intelligence. And one day, Tom called me up and said, Art, I want you to send me a picture of yourself and your wife. I didn't know why. Sent them off, as requested, and passport-type pictures. And you know what I got back? I got KGB IDs. Real, honest-to-God. Somehow, our intelligence community got these KGB IDs. I mean real KGB IDs. Blank. And so he took the photographs and sent them off to whoever it was, his buddy in intelligence. And what came back to me were these real KGB IDs. I've got them. And I don't know what to do with them. I don't have the slightest idea what to do with them. And I was wondering whether it would be a good idea to take them along with me into Russia when I go. Somehow, I don't think so. But it sure would be fun, wouldn't it, to whip that sucker out on a Russian, you know? Get away from me, sucker. Look at this. I'd be in jail forever over there. So would my wife.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 3rd, 1996.
You're not going to believe this one. I've got a fax from Bugs. Man, it's been a long time. Dear Art, remote view, 2 dead Bigfoots. He says feet. I'm not sure which is right. Code word Bugs, and I recognize the handwriting. This indeed is from Bugs. Oh, Bugs, where have you been? Wonder if he's about ready to resurface. And then I've got another one here. Art, hi. Phil here in Reno. I just got some good news today from Dan Mason, the program director of 780 KOH here in Reno. As of Monday, I will start training to be a board op for KOH, a dream come true. For I've been wanting to break into radio, and Mr. Mason is going to give me the chance. I'd like to ask you some advice, as you are also a board operator. What can I read or study so I can be the best board op I can be? Any help you can offer would be greatly appreciated. Thanks, Phil and Reno. Listening, of course, to KOH. Well, that's the first good thing you do. Listen to your radio station. Then you have to learn certain phrases like, it was the network, sir. That's always, you keep that one to the side. It was the network. Things like that. I don't know, Phil. I don't know what to tell you. Pay attention. Probably one of the... You know, we'll do a board op night again. I did that one night. I had a board op night. And we'll do it again. There are so many people behind the scenes out there that run the board, run the commercials, run the breaks, and so forth and so on. It's just zillions of people. Actually, 276 of them in this case. Or some fraction of that. Some of them are run by automation, of course. But there are people out there that do the duty, and they read news frequently, and the breaks. They take care of the commercial break. They've really got a very big job. So concentrate, keep your wits about you, and practice. Every chance you get, practice. That's the only word I would have for you. It is true, I guess, in a way. I'm board up. I run my own board. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
How you doing?
Okay.
Great. I am kind of calling to test your knowledge. Recall what happened on July 3rd, 1976. Do you recall what happened?
July 3rd, 1976. No, I don't.
It was the raid of Entebbe.
Oh, Entebbe.
That is the evening that Yoni Netanyahu died. That's the brother of
Benjamin,
the new prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
I was just teasing.
When the Israelis went screaming in and...
You got it.
Yeah, I remember it. I didn't remember.
Unfortunately, I was 9 years old, but I just finished reading a book about Yoni and the life of Yoni.
It was so cool. I remember watching it on TV. Everybody was so shocked and surprised and screaming and yelling and saying, why can't we do something like that?
I always wondered about that. But the Israelis, they did the job, and, you know, they've been having to defend themselves ever since.
Not exactly like Jimmy Carter's Desert One, huh?
Oh, please. Don't even take me there. But I just called to find out about that. I've been thinking about it all night, and the book that I just read, I mean, really touched me, and he was really, he really was a hero.
He really
was. And in his own way, I just thought I'd call to see if you recall that event. And
well, I'm glad you remembered it for us.
To tell the world that it did happen 20 years ago this evening.
Well, yesterday now, actually.
That's true.
And what happened so long ago on this day?
Oh, perhaps it was the independence of the country.
That day, yes, indeed. All right, thank you very much. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi. Hello? Well, first-time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. This is George in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Hi, George.
I wanted to start off by asking you, thank God that you did not put your little sister in your homemade electric chair. Did you ever get that thing working when you was a young boy, or...
I can't talk about all of that. I did do it, actually. I had her all wired in.
I just got your book, by the way, and it's fantastic, by the way.
Thank you.
Who did the cover work? It's great.
Well, his name is there. I'm sorry I don't have it on my on the tip of my tongue, but he did it gratis. He did it because he loves the show. He's a gentleman who was in, I think Memphis, maybe, and then moved to Las Vegas, as fortune would have it. And we loved his artwork so much that we asked him to do it for the book, and he did.
It's great. One of the main reasons why I called is I love to read books, and you gave me some great recommendations. One of the books I'm reading right now is called On the Beach that you mentioned in your book.
Oh, Neville Shute.
Yes, yes. And I also want to get one of the other books that you mentioned, which is Lucifer's Hammer.
Absolutely. You've got to read that.
I'll ask you, if you know if any more books. I love the kind of end of the world.
So do I. Yes, I've got to have Jerry Purnell back on. I had him on the air, you know.
Did you?
Oh, you didn't hear that?
No, I did not.
Oh, gee.
I missed that one.
Let's see. What else would be good for you? War Day.
War Day.
Yes, you've got to read a book called...
Oh, that's Whitney, Whitney Strieber?
No. I can't remember who it is, but it's called War Day.
War Day.
Uh-huh.
Sounds good. Thank you, Art.
All right. Take care. Yes, I'm a big fan of end-of-the-world books. End-of-the-world books. I've read most of them, matter of fact. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Going once.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi.
Sorry, I'm getting kind of late. Hello, Art Bell.
That's true.
Okay, I'm calling from Santa Monica.
Yes, sir.
Want to thank you... for having a great show. A lot of nights I drive to Las Vegas. I go to the county line, and I don't stay too long, and I drive back, and it's usually late at night. And
sounds
great entertainment.
Sounds a little nefarious to me.
Nefarious.
Driving to the county line. Now, what could he be doing?
Oh, I should say the state line. Oh, gosh, am I tired. I'm thinking of going surfing. And
you go out to where you see the first flashing red light, do you?
Well, why should I drive another 100 miles back and forth? 50, you know, to do the same thing.
All right, exposed. Yes.
And I wanted to make a prediction or a statement on the O.J. On the O.J. Case. And that would be there...
It's a little late for predictions, isn't it?
Well, this one's a prediction of the for the future. And I'm a prognosticator. Another reason I go to the state line, because I feel I'm a good prognosticator.
I see.
Okay, so I figure there's about a handful of people, I won't mention them, that really know the truth of what happened that night. And sooner or later, one of them's going to sell out and come forward with it.
What difference will it make? Nobody will believe them anyway.
I think they're going to prove it. They'll be able to, they're going to have to back it up with something. But there's going to be enough money to make somebody talk. Or he's going to aggravate somebody. O.J. is going to aggravate one of these people. And this might happen 5 years from now.
Again, it wouldn't matter. I mean, he's already been acquitted.
No, that won't. No, it'll just ease up some minds. It'll just ease some minds of people that. It'll kind of bring it to a little bit of closure, maybe you might say.
You know what? It'd really be a kick if O.J. didn't do it, and the real people who did it were caught.
That would be the best story ever told. One of the best.
Actually,
I'm open for that.
I will never forget that trial. I watched almost every minute.
So did I.
Yeah.
So did I.
Well, all right, my friend.
I don't want to take up too much of your time. Thank you very much, and I really enjoy listening to you. That's no kidding.
All right, this thing on O.J., is this something you saw at State Line?
No. You mean like an odds line on it? No, sir.
All right, see you later. Oh, I see. So he really wasn't... He wasn't going to State Line for the reason I thought he was. Making bets, are you, huh? A lot of things are here legal here in Nevada that are not legal elsewhere. We'll be right back. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today, Art?
I'm okay. Where are you?
I'm calling from Ashland, Oregon.
Ashland, yes, sir.
Sir, want to talk to you. It's been a while since I've listened to you. I know you said I got to turn your... Got the radio on
there. Oh, now see, you've got to turn your radio off. It confuses you. You should always do that right away.
Sorry about that. It was a recording from you earlier, and that was really confusing me. Well, I wanted to call you and talk with you and debate about legalizing all drugs. Why don't we do that?
Well, because then we'd end up with a lot of people in America hooked on drugs.
Well, we already have a lot of people in America hooked
on
drugs.
Well, we do. But do you want a lot more? How would you like double or perhaps triple that number?
Well, do you think making it illegal is a way to solve the situation?
Well, I don't think making it legal is the way to... I mean, yeah, sure. There won't be as many people in jail. That's true.
Well, that's one thing that we need.
Not at the expense of having a bunch of people out. Look, let's say that you're a junkie, all right? You use heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that all of a sudden it becomes legal and cheap. Do you honestly imagine that a whole bunch of people who would not have done it before would not say, okay, yes, siree, sir, let's give it a try, let's party down, and they try a little heroin?
Of course not. I mean, would you?
That's always the question that's asked. And because I would come back obviously, and say no... I wouldn't. That doesn't mean that a lot of people wouldn't.
Well, the way I look at it, drugs are so available in any city, any town, anywhere you go in America. If you want to do it, you can do it, regardless of whether it's legal or not.
Not easily, not without risk.
Risk of being arrested, but
yes.
Then, I mean, what does that help? What's that going to help the situation?
Well,
How would you feel if the government came in and said, okay, now cigarettes are...
Well, they may do that.
Well, okay, and then
if you live in Mesa, if you live in Mesa, Arizona, they've already done it. Don't laugh. Can't even smoke going down the sidewalk.
Well, there's so many angles you could look at it from. I mean, we need more prison space. We let rapists out after they've served a fraction of their sentences.
Mm-hmm.
the simple fact that it's not the right way to go about changing anything, throwing these people in jail. I mean, they get out of jail and they just go get another fix.
Suppose
I
were to suggest to you that somebody high on PCP or something else is very likely to rape or plunder or rob.
Okay, now PCP is a very, you know, PCP, crack, heroin, I don't like them. I don't think, you know, they should be given to the kids,
but
on the other hand, I don't think you should be thrown in jail if you have a problem with it. If you do something because, like on PCP, if you rape someone or do something, that's a separate crime. You should be put in jail for
don't
it.
You think, don't you think, sir, that people on PCP are more likely to rape or rob than those who are not?
Right, but when you look at the large portion of drug users, most of it is marijuana, other things that...
You can't sell... Yeah, but you can't sell the case for legalization of all drugs by talking marijuana.
Okay, but... Okay, all drugs, then. If someone does something else while they're on PCP, they're going to be put in jail, and if you let all the nonviolent drug offenders who haven't done anything other than...
Look.
What's their own right? You're going to be able to put that person, that violent person, in jail and leave them there.
But the
instead
argument...
of letting them out after
yes,
two
but,
months
sir,
because you've got all these... dope smokers in who haven't done anything but exercise their own...
All right, see, it always comes down to that. See, all dope smokers. He's talking about dope smokers. Well, look, marijuana is one thing. There's a good argument to be made for decriminalizing it. Fine. That doesn't make the argument for legalizing all the other hard drugs. It just doesn't make it. And I wish we could separate marijuana from all of the other hard drugs so people would quit screeching that argument. Then they would have to legitimately argue, yeah, let's legalize heroin and crack and PCP and all the other crap that's out there on the streets. In the meantime, they are reduced to making the argument about marijuana. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art. I just wanted to make a comment on our birthday today.
Yes, indeed.
I often get frustrated in an election year in which Congress would go home and stay there for 6 months or so. They pass all these dumb laws. But I was thinking this morning, had they not survived what was apparently a very hot and humid summer in Philadelphia, we wouldn't be celebrating today. And I think it's a day to celebrate.
Well, it is. And later today, you will see things going boom and into the sky in celebration of exactly that. Not that that many people will think about it in that way. They'll just sit there and go, ooh, ah, and they don't think about why. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art, let me get the radio real quick.
Turn that sucker off. Right by your telephone. Well, are you there? No, he hung up. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
All right, Art Bell.
Yes, sir.
Guess what?
What?
A cat has come to us on Independence Day.
Really?
Yes, the cutest little thing.
How did this cat come to you?
I was sitting in the living room dubbing a tape that I want to send to you. With
yes.
Some, tunes on it.
Yeah.
And I had a barrier set up by the back door to keep any skunks that may be wandering by.
A skunk out. Barrier, yes.
Mm-hmm. But it
put up several of those myself.
But to keep the rabbits out, of course. And I looked up, and there was this this little kitty hanging over the barrier.
Hanging over the barrier?
Its front paws hanging over the top looking in.
Oh, that's too cute.
Oh, yes. So it caused a facial expression in me, I'm sure, which encouraged it to go ahead and jump on over, and it came over, and it plopped itself down on the floor there in front of me.
Really?
And I said, I know what you're doing. And it kicked its feet up in the legs and kind of, you know, did that little twisty thing. And I said, I don't know. You know, we can't afford a kitty cat.
Yes, you can.
And then it begged.
It begged.
Its eyes was just begging.
It begged?
Yes, it begged. So I said, okay, I'll talk to Mommy in the morning and we'll see. So it jumped up and started to explore the house.
Of course.
Went into the back room.
Yes.
A couple of minutes later, I went in there and looked at, you know, to see what it was up to. It had gotten up on my 3-year-old daughter's bed, Jean Marie, and it was stretched out longer than a baseball bat.
Aww.
Right next to her. So, again, the heartstrings are being tugged. Jean Marie eventually woke up, and she's all, look, Daddy, look, Daddy. And it's just the gentlest thing, playing paws with her and not extending its claws at all. And But we can't afford a kitty cat.
I already have three, so don't talk to me.
No, no, no. How about listeners? Any listener that sends a quarter will receive a picture of her and Jean Marie. I know what I'm getting myself into.
No, that's a racket. That's a racket. No.
No, it's not. I swear. I'll send you a picture of them first.
Send a quarter. Send a quarter. What are you talking about?
Because we can't afford a kitty cat. We've got two kids.
Well, maybe somebody out there would be willing to adopt it.
Okay, well, but the alternative is going to be the Humane Society. Oh, no.
The gas chamber.
No.
The little kitty electric chair.
No. Don't.
That's a racket. Anybody who sends a quarter will be given. That's terrible, sir. You lay out this story, and then you try to solicit a quarter for a photograph of this little waif of a cat and your daughter? It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. You're going to do that on national radio? Man, now I've heard it all. First time caller in line, you're on the air.
Hey, Art.
Hello.
Mike from New Orleans. How you doing?
All right. Would you send a quarter to get a photograph of that cat?
That's outrageous.
Oh, man. Nerve of some people.
Listen, to quickly change the subject, I wanted to ask you about the Urantia books.
Oh, yes.
Do you not cover that subject matter because it's too religious, or have you had anybody on about the subject?
Well, as a 99th degree Mason, I've been told not to talk about Urantia.
No. Okay.
No, I don't know. We've talked about it.
Have you ever had anybody on?
Well, yes. A couple of Dreamland guests have discussed it, yes.
And is there any, is it, like, legit? Or is it like a college thesis? Or
I pray to the book every day myself. I don't know. It's, you know, it's one of those things. Do you believe? Do you not believe? That sort of
thing. Well, I've checked it out on the Internet, and that's about the extent of what I've seen. And it's pretty detailed, and all these levels. And let me say that I've checked out your website from beginning to end, every word.
Now, we have got a cool website. If you guys over the weekend want something to do, go check out our website. It's www.artbell.com, right?
And that chupacabra is something else.
Oh, it really is. And that chupacabra, by the way, is going to be in our newsletter, this coming newsletter. So a lot of people who have not seen it are going to get to see its absolute ugliness. Listen, you're down in New Orleans?
Yes, sir.
Listening to who, Dad?
That's correct, WDT.
All right. Well, I'm going to modify the usual honors this morning. And instead of saying goodnight, America, I thought it might be appropriate for you to say something like, hey, from New Orleans, happy birthday, America. How about that?
From New Orleans, from the home of the best food in the world, happy birthday, America.
And from the high desert, this is Art Bell. Happy birthday, America.